Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from outside the Imperial City in the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capital Beltway.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. Once again, welcome to the Tex and Rex Show. And Rex, what do we have on the agenda today?
Well, Tex, it's an interesting agenda because we're going to be talking about wobbly wusses and men of steel. Not sure if
wobbly
everybody's
wusses,
had a chance.
Are those like Weeble Wobbles?
Yeah, they're much more wobbly than Weeble Wobbles. Basically, Sarah Palin was asked about, you know, the fiscal cliff and the negotiations with the Obama White House and such, and she told the Republicans not to be wobbly and not to be wusses. And then, of course, since that was, I believe that was done on the faux news channel, where she has I think it's a $1 million contract with them, so they made her walk that back. But Sarah, in her usual entertaining way, gave a half apology. I mean, she said she shouldn't have called them wobbly, or she shouldn't have called the wobbly ones wusses, but it was kind of with a wink and a nod that, like, well, they're still wusses. But I think it's a valid point. I think she's absolutely spot on, because there's no doubt about it, the Republicans are being total wussies.
Well, the important thing is, Rex, when doing political analysis, is that you shouldn't make it accurate analysis. You know, if it might slightly hurt your team rather than your cause, because what's important is not the cause, according to Fox News, but rather the success of the team.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think that's the fundamental problem we've got is that the so-called right-wing media has to define themselves over and against the liberal media when, you know, look, they're just selling you a point of view and they're willing to lie just as much to make their point of view go forward as the other guys. And then, you know, the whole idea of winning elections is about winning elections for your party. You know, that's the paradigm that we're stuck in because of this duopoly narrative that we've been force-fed for so long. And the fact is, look, if you're in the media, then you're not about, I mean, granted, yes, you need ratings and you need an audience. You know, you and I need an audience. We work on an audience. And by the way, you can help us out with the audience by following the show and sharing the page with your friends, downloading the MP3 from our Blog Talk Radio page, and also liking our Facebook page so you can get updates and look at some of the articles that we talk about. But while you're building an audience, you want to build an audience for a purpose. And if you are fair and balanced, then be fair and balanced. If you're going to be a conservative voice, then be a conservative voice. But faux news is neither fair nor balanced, nor genuinely conservative, although they will give, at least until recently, conservatives more of a voice than some of the other networks. And then, of course, with the Republicans, it's the Karl Rove strategy of winning one for the team. Well, had Karl Rove's failed strategy worked, and had the Republicans won with Mitt Romney and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, how would that bode for conservatism?
Well, exactly. And whether you're talking about building an audience or building a political party, you're building it around a set of core beliefs and principles. And if you start deviating from those, then there's a question, you know, what is the mission here? What is the purpose? Just to stop the other side? well, if your side is actively aiding and abetting that other side and only slightly slowing it down, then you're not getting anywhere. And that's part of the problem. And so now we're in the midst of the last remnants of the 112th Congress and the first Obama term coming into a lame duck session where they figure no one's watching. A new Congress will come in a couple months, and the new Congress can blame the previous Congress for the sellout and say, but this is where we were once we were sworn in. And once again, you know, organizing, building a party for the purpose of having a party and not for the purpose of standing up for the principle.
Right. I mean, look, there's no question about it that the RNC has absolutely abandoned any principle other than winning. And the crazy thing about their principle of merely winning, they suck at it. I mean, let's walk this back. And I want to walk it back to 92 because that was my first federal election that I got to vote in. And, you know, growing up in the Reagan 80s, I was gung-ho excited about getting a chance to vote for Reagan's successor. And in 88, a lot of people did that, and they voted for George H.W. Bush. And he turned out to be anything but Reagan's successor. I mean, people thought, honestly, in the 8 years he served with Reagan, that voodoo economics had actually seen supply side and all the other stuff that Reagan did, you know, work, and that he campaigned on in 88. People thought, well, you know, maybe he's, you know, he's come along. Well, clearly he didn't, because all that guy managed to do was lie. In fact, this is what
raise taxes and I'll say no, and they'll push and I'll say no, and they'll push again and I'll say to them, read my lips.
Yeah, and then what did he do? He turned around and raised the taxes. Okay, now, obviously he didn't raise the taxes because taxes are revenue bills. They have to originate in the House. But, you know, he signed off on it pretty easy. And this shows you that our founding fathers were just geniuses in creating a system of checks and balances where you have this tug and pull between the executive who administers the spending of the money and the Congress, which administers the appropriations of the money, and they can go back and forth. The president can submit a balanced budget to Congress and tell them he won't sign it unless they return it balanced. And the Congress can tell a president, we're not giving you any more money beyond the balanced budget. So these things can be done, but it takes resolve, and that's ostensibly what the political parties are for, to put forward a platform, a set of principles, and then govern based on those. But they typically don't.
Well,
and, you know, go ahead.
Well, what I find interesting, Rex, is, you know, what you're talking about in terms of effective governing strategy from the House, which has a lot of power, more and more people are going back and they're looking at what Newt Gingrich did and how he was able to do it. Newt Gingrich has a bigger platform now. You know, people were saying, oh, he's unelectable, his negatives are too high. He's all over the place now. The Republican Party can't get enough of him. That was never true when they were saying his negatives were too high. Because what his negatives were about was he balanced the budget. He reformed welfare as we know it, and the Democrats attacked him for it. The media attacked him for it. And the problem was not that that happened, but that the Republican Party didn't back him up. Bob Dole wasn't out there shoulder to shoulder with Newt Gingrich saying this is the type of leadership we need. He was running away from him.
That's right, and he lost.
Yeah,
he lost
exactly.
Because of it. You know, and that goes back to what we were saying. I mean, this you know, rape and pillage the wealth of ostensibly conservative voters through Crossroads and Crossroads GPS and all that crap, and run this massive fear campaign of fear of Obama, and think that because people are so afraid of Obama, they'll vote for your shitty rhino, Karl Rove. That didn't work out too well, and you suck. In fact, you suck so much that the unfair and unbalanced Fox News has actually had to temporarily ask you not to be on the air. How's that working out for you, Mr. Karl Rove? But the interesting thing is, if we go back, we don't have to go all the way back to 92. We can go back to 2010. The Republicans won, and they won big. They had a massive wave of Tea Party activists in support, looking for debt cutting, fiscal prudence, even sound money, since the whole thing has a Ron Paulish flavor to it. And At that time, you had a...
That is good, positive brand identification, by the way. If you're identified with Sound Money, I would say you're doing good. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, it worked out well for Ron Paul for the last 36 years. And you got a good, capable, intelligent, principled, and extremely capable communicator as your party chairman, and that would be the Man of Steel, Michael Steele, former lieutenant governor from the state of Maryland. And the victory was so overwhelmingly successful that the Republicans were scared shitless that this populist movement, a.k.a. the Tea Party, had swept these freshmen into the 2010 Congress, that these guys might become a problem, that their solution was shut them down, appropriate them, infiltrate the various Tea Parties and turn them into a Republican movement, and then let's go ahead and fire Steele and hire little Prince Pubic.
Would you sum up their reaction as, yay, we won, holy shit.
Yeah, that's a perfect, that's exact. I could see John Boehner going, yay, we won, holy shit. And then, of course, you can always ask Boehner what he's really thinking, and just say, Boehner, now that you've won the majority in the Congress, what is it that you want to accomplish?
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
Oh, that's fucking genius. We're ready to be led.
That's one hell of an agenda he's laid out there.
Yeah,
that's
powerful,
know,
right?
We're here. You got anything you want passed, you just let us know. Maybe I could sum up the votes.
Well, it just shows to you that, Sarah Palin was 100% right. They're wobbly. Now, I wouldn't say they're really wobbly because they're only wobbly in the sense that they're feigning that they're indignant at Obama's proposal, when in fact they're planning on going along with it from the get-go, which makes your second point absolutely valid. They are wusses. Michael Steele was not a wuss. He stood up and he acted as a good chairman. These guys, Speaker Boehner, little Prince Pubic, even Mitt Romney, these guys are wusses. I mean, think about it, right? Mitt Romney in the campaign, right? He went after fellow conservatives hard. He hit Ron Paul. He hit Newt Gingrich. He hit hard. He lied. He spent a lot of money. The only one he didn't seem to go after too much was little Ricky Santorum. I wonder why. You ever wonder why?
Yeah. Because he had no chance. Because he was in the doghouse of the Republican Party. They breathed life into his whole candidacy and his whole reason for being there to puff him up as some great distraction from actual conservatives who, in the race at the time, were Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich. And so,
right.
Oh, my God, we can't have – there's Romney on its face can't defeat these guys. All Romney has is money. So we got to move Florida up so that Romney can use his money advantage to overwhelm these people. And then Rick Santorum coming out of Florida, Romney wins by some small percentage over Newt Gingrich. I think it was 2 or 3%, something like that. And Karl Rove all of a sudden starts talking about, but look at Rick Santorum and how well he's doing. This is the same thing that happened to the Ron Paul people, where Ron Paul would come in either first or second place in all these straw polls or all these various elections, and the media wouldn't talk about it. They'd talk about the second place guy. Well, look, Romney came in second, so he's looking really good. And they would ignore that Ron Paul had won, or Ron Paul would come in second place, and they would talk about the third place finisher. They started doing that same stuff to Gingrich as well, because they don't want conservatives in Washington.
Yeah, why would they want that? I mean, conservatives, those guys are controversial. They say stuff, and they do things that are uncomfortable. We can't have that.
The source of a congressman's power is spending money, and so if conservatives come in and they start cutting the budget and there's less money to spend, then Congress becomes less powerful.
Bingo.
So,
but the thing to me that was fascinating, though, is, other than propping up little Ricky Santorum as some kind of, fantastic guy or something, the venom, the vigor, the money, and the aggression that went to shutting down Paul and Gingrich in the primaries, and even to the level of cheating at the convention, that showed a massive desire to win. But then when it came time to take on Obama, Mr. President, I agree with you. The president's right. I mean, it was the exact opposite. It's like kid's gloves in the campaign against Obama after a scorched earth campaign against conservatives, Gingrich and Paul, to win the nomination.
Well,
I mean,
Rex, that's because they have these bogus polls, right? Which these polls are so useless that you can't divine any information from them whatsoever. And so the media talks about these endlessly, which what they were telling the Romney campaign is, well, people like Barack Obama as a person. So don't attack him because they'll get upset and they'll, hey, don't attack my friend. I like him as a person. Well, you know, I like a lot of people as a person. I just think that they're not good at, you know, being a politician or, you know, doing whatever the heck it is that they're doing. But it doesn't mean I don't dislike him. It's just like you're not the person for this job, you know. And Romney wasn't making the case that you're not the person for this job because look at your record. You know, he wasn't going after and attacking that because, partly because the largest portion of Barack Obama's record is the same as Mitt Romney's record. So he couldn't run on record. All he could run on is personality. And, you know, Mitt Romney has the personality of a wet blanket.
Yeah, or a house plant. Yep.
But now it's the failure of conservatism, which is ironic because Mitt Romney was never a conservative.
Well, not only was he never a conservative, but, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, his personality was somewhat lacking. I mean, I suspect that he had some moments where he was kind of lively. I mean, I'm sure he said something that was
interesting. I love this state. It seems right here. The trees are the right height.
You know, or...
Who let the dogs out? Who?
Yeah, you're right. He's kind of wet blanket. But in any event, I don't think that if he was more exciting, he would have won anyway. But what I find fascinating is this insipid, wussy duopoly move that we're seeing, where we had the scorched earth campaign in the primaries against conservatives, and then we were completely tepid and weak and handled the opposition, the Democrat Obama, with kid gloves. Well, we're seeing the same thing play out again. I mean, in this fiscal cliff debate, right? Boehner comes out to be firm against Obama, but really he's kind of telling him, Mr. President, we want to be led. But then when he's got conservatives on budget committees, conservatives, talking about cutting spending and about, you know, not falling over the fiscal cliff by not capitulating on taxes and actually cutting spending, what's his answer? He removes them from the committees. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's, what else would the Speaker of the House, should the Speaker of the House be doing now but promoting people who are going to be firm on this fiscal cliff negotiations? The only thing this guy wants to do.
It won't happen around a campfire at Camp David or in a secret room at some Air Force base, or as much as I'd like, over 18 holes of golf.
And that's his attitude. That's your speaker. That's the most powerful Republican in the country. That's the man third in line for the White House. That's his answer.
And, you know, what's the big news today? Boehner is meeting with Barack Obama today, and nobody knows what they're talking about. I have an idea what they're talking about. Boehner keeps saying how he wants to go play 18 holes of golf with Barack Obama. He's like, hey, tell you what, you give me this tax increase, and I'll go play 18 holes of golf with you all spring.
Yep.
You know, that's most likely what they're talking about. You know, not too much more complicated than that.
Tex, we've got a caller on the line. I actually believe it is Speaker Boehner. He's calling to let us know what he thinks of our analysis of his negotiation on the fiscal cliff and the removal of conservatives from committee positions. Oh, hi, Speaker Boehner. Oh, no, it's okay. No. I mean, we didn't mean to make you cry. I mean, it's just that you had these conservatives. No, calm down. We'll let you play golf later, but there's some real work to be done. I mean, is that all you're going to do? You're just going to sit there and be orange? I mean, seriously, dude. Okay, I can't take this. This is live radio. I'm going to have to hang up on your phone. All right, well, let's give the speaker some time to compose himself. Maybe he can come back later. I'll bring him in. Speaking of call-ins, if you'd like to chat about the wobbly wussies, the men of steel, and what's going on in these alleged negotiations, the call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And if you are in our chat at the very top, there is an article written by Newt Gingrich. I pulled it off Gingrich Productions, but I believe it's from his weekly Human Events newsletter. Tex, unless you want to follow up on what Speaker Boehner said, I'd like to tear into this article a little bit.
Please go ahead. Yeah, let's hear what Newt Gingrich had to say.
All right. Now, everybody who's listened to the show for a while knows that, you know, you and I were full-on Gingrich supporters for this season, and that we're also extremely sympathetic to Dr. Ron Paul retiring from Congress this year, and I suspect just like Obi-Wan Kenobi, he'll now be more powerful than they can ever imagine. But whatever anybody thinks of Speaker Gingrich, there are certain things that he did get done that you can't deny. Okay, he came in to the speakership 94, for, you know, Speaker 95, first Republican majority in Congress in over 40 years. They told him it couldn't be done. He did it. He had the contract with America. There were 10 points where he said, these are the things we're going to do if you elect us. And he got in there, and within 90 days, voted on every single one of them and got some of them through. Now, remember that in 94, he was campaigning for the midterms after a very popular, liberal, charismatic, intelligent, Democratic president, Bill Clinton, was attempting to provide us with the precursor to Romney Care and Obamacare, known as Hillary Care. He spent money on a stimulus, and he raised the marginal rates up to near 40% on the federal taxes. So, ostensibly, a Keynesian liberal disaster. And here comes Newt forcing biggest capital gains tax cut in history, well, other than taking it to zero, which is where it used to be, balancing four budgets. And yes, it is what they call, you know, baseline budgeting. So if by normal accounting terms, no, those budgets weren't balanced, but by Washington, D.C. standards, they were. And if you look over the last 60 years, those are the only four budgets that have come out of Washington that were, in fact, balanced. Reformed welfare, which was a huge program to actually help the people that were in the program, and it cost less. And all these negotiations started by Newt Gingrich doing something that John Boehner seems incapable of doing, and that is standing up to the president. John Boehner is a crying wuss. Newt Gingrich was a giant with big brass ones who actually threatened to shut down the government by not giving Clinton what he wanted, and then went ahead and did it. And that's what forced Clinton to negotiate with him. And it was done face-to-face. And as Newt said, you can't have your people call his people and then have a scheduled phone conference. He said, we were in a room face-to-face, and we negotiated, and we got these things done. And, of course, John Boehner and the fellow rhinos, they rewarded Newt Gingrich for this after 4 years by doing what, Tex?
They ousted him. They got rid of him from power. And, you know, you mentioned what John Boehner is unable to do. Well, you know, is it really that he's unable to do it or that he's unwilling to do it? Has, you know, when has John Boehner been talking about, you know, reforming entitlements? You know, what is he going to do about entitlement reform? How is he going to cut the budget, you know? If you go along with tax increases, what are you getting in return? Okay, Mr. President, we'll give in. You know, I'm ready to be led, so I'll give in with your tax increase proposal. You know, okay, well, you could even do that if you got something substantial in return, and maybe people will forgive you, but you're a complete, you know, sellout cave-in, and you never really have any intention of cutting spending programs, so you don't hear about that. And so what they're going to do is say that, well, if you go along with these tax cuts right now, or tax increases right now, sorry, if you go along with these tax increases right now, later on in the 113th Congress, we'll go along with your budget cuts. Well, this is the classic Washington game, which is the tax increases we get today, the budget cuts we get tomorrow. And then it'll be a different Congress with a different makeup, and the whole conversation will be different, and no one will remember this conversation being had now and any deal that may or may not have come out of it. And so it's just an invitation to sell out the base. And
yep.
Boehner is more than happy to do it.
Yep. You're absolutely right. I mean, I would argue that, one, he's not willing to do this because he doesn't want to actually put forward any conservative ideas because they generally tend to be uncomfortable at first. Remember when Reagan did this, we were in a terrible economy in the early 80s. Reagan came in with his, you know, massive tax cut idea, you know, dropping your rate from 70 to 50 and then finally down to 28 a few years later. And initially it actually shocked the system and it was unpleasant. And that's what these guys want to avoid. But then it works. The fact is that it is unpleasant. The fact is that right now we are living in an economy that is worse than the economy of 29 and 33, where the Keynesian policies of Roosevelt provided us with a recession within the Great Depression and even higher unemployment. This is worse. And oh, Rex, you're crazy. It's not worse. It's not nearly as bad. There aren't bread lines and blah, blah, blah. Right, there's no bread lines. But you got 47 million people on food stamps. Just because they're put on a credit card doesn't mean that there's no bread lines. There are bread lines. Okay? People are out of their homes. Lots of people have lost their homes and are now renting, and we're probably subsidizing that as well. The reason it doesn't appear to be as bad is because they've papered over the fucking mess, and that only makes it worse. So if you're going to implement true conservative ideas, true economic ideas, and sound money like what Ron Paul keeps talking about, yeah, it's going to hurt at first. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be controversial. People that don't understand it are going to be pissed off. But it's like a Band-Aid. It hurts for a little while, and then it really gets better. What these guys are doing is exactly what Newt said would happen if you let them win. They're managing the decay. That's what they're doing. And, you know, Newt knows these things. Newt is strategic, and he understands not only how to win, but he understands how to actually govern. And that's the key. Now, maybe you don't like some of his ideas. I certainly don't like some of his ideas. But at least I like most of his ideas, and he knows how to get things done. And he's laid it out right here in this relatively short article that is not complicated to read. If you're in our chat, I just posted it in there from Gingrich Productions. It's called The Smart Legislative Strategy for Obama's Second Term. And if Boehner had any balls, not only if he was willing, but he's incapable. But here's the map right here. It says, real simple, Gingrich. This is written December 5th from Human Events. Instead of being focused on a phony fiscal cliff, Republicans might focus on how they will approach Obama's second term. What should they do? They're in a different world than they just expected 1 month ago. Instead of cooperating with a new president-elect shit Romney, they find themselves baited, taunted, and attacked by a newly reelected and re-energized President Obama. Re-energized? I mean, the guy got 13% less people voting for him than 4 years ago, but whatever. The news media, of course, is in full collusion with the president in defining the current situation in pro-liberal, anti-Republican terms. Well, the Republicans make it so easy to be anti-Republican. Why wouldn't they? So here it is. I'm going to cut to the chase. He talks about, first, it would be a betrayal of the very principles for which they campaigned and the voters who elected them. Second, it would deeply and bitterly split the House Republican conference between hardcore conservatives and Obama supporters. And here he's referring to, controversial Republican news in the media as opposed to the current narrative that they're giving us. Third, it would embolden President Obama and the left to increase their demands and push for even more. And House Republicans are already guaranteed a majority status through 2014. The odds are overwhelming that they will increase rather than decrease their numbers in 2014. And the reason for that is because the RNC has very little to do with what's going on in House elections because of the Liberty Movement and the remnant of the Tea Party, which I suspect we might see a resurgence of. So regarding the election, he says – go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rex.
Well, he says, regarding the election, House Republicans don't have to worry about day-to-day headlines or day-to-day polls because it's not until 2014 and they seem to be in a good position. They have the opportunity of thinking to develop a new strategic response. It was this understanding of time and strategic patterns which enabled the first House Republican majority in 40 years to become, in 1996, the first re-elected House majority in 68 years. Now, just listen to that. That's a pretty key point there. It was the first majority in 40 years and the first one to be reelected in 68 years because of what he did. Okay, so he knows what he's talking about. This isn't just a matter of academic strategery. Okay, this is from experience. So the Washington established mythology of the Clinton years almost completely falsifies what actually happened. And we've talked about this before on the show. House Republicans closed the government twice in late 1995 in their determination to convince President Clinton and the national establishment that we were going to balance the federal budget for the first time in a generation. Closed the government twice. The Washington media still believe this was a major mistake, and I believe John Boehner thinks it's a major mistake. Yet closing the government convinced the Republican base and the conservative movement that we were serious and had the courage to stand and fight for our convictions. I agree. That's how I felt. Didn't you? 1 year later, House Republicans were reelected despite a resounding defeat for Republican presidential candidate Robert Dole. Almost no one in the national establishment has ever looked at the GOP's House victory and why it occurred. Welfare reform and the only four balanced budgets in the modern era were a direct result of that strategy. Furthermore, those balanced budgets were produced by economic growth brought about by tax cuts, not by a socialist austerity program based on tax increases. House Republicans should take the next 6 weeks to meet in private and work through a grand strategy for the next 4 years. Of course, they would have to do that without John Boehner because he's a pussy. They have to develop a strategic program that can stop and then reverse the efforts of President Obama and the left to fundamentally change America. This is precisely the type of moment the founding fathers designed the constitutional balance for. Oh, it's weird. They gave us this power, and John Boehner doesn't want to use it because it's controversial, right? The founding fathers understood that the executive branch could potentially become dictatorial and too powerful. That is why they built in checks and balances. The House has five great tools for offsetting a president. These tools are helped by a cooperative Senate, but they are not eliminated by an uncooperative Senate. Now, Newt knows about an uncooperative Senate because the Dole-led Senate was uncooperative with his contract with America, and then they put Dole up to lose to Clinton in 96. So the five tools are appropriations, oversight, legislation, communications, and negotiations. Have you heard about any other than negotiation in the news, Tex?
Has anyone discussed it? Absolutely not. And look, that's the whole, you know, part of the problem with sending it over to committee, which would be the oversight, is Boehner just purged conservatives from the committees. So you
exactly.
have oversight, your oversight is by rhinos.
Exactly. He just ditched, was it Schweikart, Amash, Hultkamp, and Jones because, well, he says he's not punishing them for anything other than it was, you know, they were disloyal. What he simply means is that they weren't willing to go along with his little pet Paul Ryan bullshit tax cut or spending cut budget. I mean, what? Can't even say it. Ryan's balanced budget would be what, 34 years from now? Some ridiculous thing like that?
Yeah.
Newt did it right.
Well,
yeah, come on. What is that?
Yeah,
That's the point. We won't be here in 34 years.
This is one of the points, Rex, which is, look, Obama's saying, look, if you work with me on raising taxes right now, I'm going to work with you on budget cuts when the next Congress comes in, right? Okay. Well, in the 2010, the Tea Party went out there. We get into office, we take over control of the House of Representatives. We send Tea Party representatives there, and they start fighting for reducing the budget. And Boehner goes through and just decimates these people left and right using redistricting and other things. I asked Alan West about that in order to get rid of their district so that he doesn't have to deal with them. And then remember the train wreck and how, you know, Maxine Waters was yelling about these people are demons, the Tea Party, and all that other kind of nonsense that she was talking about was because they were going to have a budget deal that cut spending. And you know how much spending John Boehner, rock solid, you know, steel spine Boehner was able to squeeze out of Barack Obama in that year, fiscal year? $25 billion. He got the government with a $1.6 trillion deficit each year, and he got $25 billion of cuts. And this basically throughout the summer was the whole thing about how the Tea Party and their cuts were going to destroy America, right? And by not actually getting real cuts out of those negotiations, he allowed that narrative to stand. Because Newt Gingrich, he got real cuts out of Bill Clinton because he showed a resolve to actually shut down the government because it's difficult to be the president of the United States with the executive of the government if the government just went home for a couple weeks. Now you're just a guy in an office. The government shut down. What is the executive executing at the moment? Who's listening to his instructions? Congress? Because the bureaucrats aren't around. And that showed that, look, this, and Gingrich did it twice. And that showed Clinton, like, look, this guy's freaking serious. Let's do some cuts. And what Boehner said was, I'm not serious. Let's do some fake cuts so that I can claim that I got cuts. And I'll talk about the cuts that I got over 10 years rather than the paltry, you know, nickel that you gave me in cuts this year.
Well, look, this is basic negotiations 101. This is why we have ostensibly have at least a public policy of you don't negotiate with terrorists. This is why if you're in a hostage situation, if the status quo changes, the hostage is dead, because as long as the hostage is useful, the hostage will be alive. As soon as the hostage is no longer useful, they die, which is why you don't pay the ransom and why you don't, capitulate. So what's happening here is you're cooperating with the enemy. The enemy's not going to give you what you want. When you scare the shit out of them because you stand firm, they come to the table a little bit weaker. This happened with the Soviets in Ronald Reagan. You know, they saw this crazy cowboy who's willing to start World War III, so they were a little panicked. Now, they had nuclear superiority at the time, but then they got wind of this strategic defense initiative, this Star Wars program, and they thought, oh, crap, if the Americans can knock down all of our missiles, it doesn't matter how many more we have, we'll fire at them. Our missiles will be knocked out of the sky. Their missiles will destroy St. Petersburg and Moscow and everything else. So we better negotiate with them. They came to the table. Same thing with Clinton and Gingrich, right? Gingrich says, I'm not giving you more taxes, more spending, stimulus, and all this stuff. And Clinton says, oh, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Well, since revenue bills originate in the House, I'm just not going to give you anything. Boom. Well, the government will shut down. Newt. Okay, let the government shut down. Big deal. And it happened. Shut it down.
I was kind of happy Clinton. When it shut down. I was like, well, that's great.
Yeah, shut it down more often.
What could be better? Yeah.
We should shut it down 9 months of every year.
And then what was the Senate doing while Gingrich is shutting down the government? Senate Republicans were, you know, out there trashing this and saying, oh, we don't want to see a government shut down. You know, we don't support this. No, because they didn't want to get blamed, because they don't want to have to go out and explain conservatism to the conservative party, you know. To the American people. They don't want to stand up for what they claim. They run on all this stuff, and they, you know, say, oh, I believe in this. I believe that you vote for me. I believe in this. And then when push comes to shove and there's actual fight over it, they're like, ah, I don't want to go explain that to anybody because I don't believe it. It's just a bunch of words I say.
Well, not only were they in opposition, but just like what Boehner's doing now, they want to lead with their weakest weapon, right? Negotiations. That's all we hear about, negotiations.
Yeah.
It's the weakest weapon.
That's to show good faith. That's to show good faith to the Democrats, to show that they're actually on board. Oh, I'll leave
it's
my
crap.
Weakest weapon. I'll pick you with this feather if you don't cut it out.
It's just duopoly crap so that they can play rhetorical games, go on the Sunday talk shows, make their speeches about how firm they're being while they're completely capitulating. Newt goes on to say, the House Republicans today are over-relying on negotiations, the fifth and least useful of the five tools. Our effective negotiations with President Clinton only came after the two government shutdowns. We had to earn his respect, direct hard confrontation before we could get his attention for practical negotiations. The negotiation tool is the weakest because it centralizes communications and decision-making into a formula which maximizes the president's dominance within the national news media. Exactly. Especially when it's mostly liberal media that's in favor of this guy. Now, here's
Isn't
the fascinating...
Isn't it embarrassing for Boehner that Newt Gingrich has to tell him how to be Speaker of the House? Just saying. Anyway.
I think that Boehner, just as long as he's got his cushy little job and his 18 rounds of golf, he doesn't give a shit. He's weak. But here's the thing. This is what fascinates me, okay? Why are we afraid to do these things? I mean, these are some bold words from Gingrich, and it was bold to shut down the government, right? It's almost like there's a conflict or a contest or some kind of animosity between the president and the House. Good. That's how it's supposed to be. I mean, that's the reason for checks and balances. It's the reason that the Founding Fathers divided up the powers so that they would be in conflict. Conflict is good. That's how you eliminate bad ideas. It's how you eliminate corruption. It's how you put forward good ideas. You fight it out. So when you're trying to get along and reach across the aisle and bipartisan this and let's go to golf together and have afternoon tea and, you know, whatever else that they do, crap. You're not there to be friends. You weren't elected to go to Washington and go hang out at the parties and the gallery openings and all that bullshit. You were hired to go there and fight. And this guy's not fighting. And you want to know something? You need to stop him. And the way you do that is you annoy the hell out of him every single day. You send him an email. You call his office. You get on Twitter and you tweet #FireBoehner. And you send him notes and articles like this one. Tweet this article to him. In fact, tweet it to him and say, @NewtGingrich was a better speaker than you, @JohnBoehner. Fire Boehner. You have
speaker
to do
for
it.
Life,
you got to
Newt Gingrich. Anyway.
Yeah. Put the pressure on these guys. Let them know what's going on. Now, it's a long shot that in the next Congress, Newt Gingrich will be Speaker. It's a very long shot. But what if it's somebody who respects Newt Gingrich? What if it's somebody who shares Newt Gingrich's idea? What if it's somebody who might actually pick up the phone and go, hey, Newt, in this negotiation I got coming up on XYZ issue, what do you think I should do as Speaker of the House? Well, this is how I'd handle it. Oh, great. Now, who would do that? Well, anybody who's got any job and saw somebody having the same job before them, was successful at it, would be an idiot not to ask for advice from that person. John Boehner's too proud, plus, you know, he doesn't like Newt. Newt doesn't like him because John Boehner helped oust Newt back in 99 for doing these very things that a good Speaker of the House is supposed to do. Fight. Quit getting along. Quit being such a pussy. Quit being nice. And fight for the principles that our platform allegedly says you stand for, Speaker Boehner. Quit being such a fucking baby. Now, here it is.
Well, the other thing is people think that we are approaching, you know, we're on the Titanic, we're approaching the physical cliff. America has just, you know, hit the iceberg, and reelecting Barack Obama is like backing up and hitting it again. You know, everyone feels that we're on the precipice, but on the Titanic, at least they rearranged the deck chairs at a minimum. I mean, I think it's a fruitless effort, but at least they did that. We're not even rearranging the deck chairs. We're not changing the leadership. We're locking in with the same leadership that got us here in the first place, that sold out the Tea Party movement and the Liberty movement.
Well, we're making changes.
That's a bad sign. 113 Congress has to have a different Speaker of the House. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, because this Speaker of the House is making changes. Just like Mitt Romney, who attacked conservatives in order to be, you know, play pussyfoot with the Obama and the general, John Boehner is attacking real men of steel, hardcore Tea Party, Ron Paul Revolution conservatives, and pussyfooting around with the Democrats. He's an enemy of this party.
Yeah, you want to know how spineless he is. So they go through and they replace these members of the various committees, right? So those guys being, again, Republican Representative David Schweikert of Arizona, Walter Jones of North Carolina, and Amash of Maine.
Justin,
and then we had Hensarlik.
Heuselkamp.
Okay. Yeah. So these are the people who get removed.
Sorry. I see nothing.
These are the people who get removed from the various committees, and you know, we're letting this happen. But the thing is, Boehner has no spine, because when he's confronted with this by Republicans, by conservatives in the party, and even Newt Gingrich says he thinks that is a very destructive path to go down, because now you're creating divisions in the Republican Party. Boehner's house first. His spokesperson, Michael Steele, not the Michael Steele, but a different Michael Steele, who is on Boehner's staff, says that, well, you know, this is what happens if you don't go along with what Boehner wants. And then there's this huge backlash against that comment, and so they blame the steering committee. Well, the steering committee, they have certain criteria, and they decide these things John Boehner doesn't. So now they're blaming the steering committee. So what are these criteria? And they said, well, you know, it's amorphous, it's ambiguous, it's changing, ever-changing all the time. Okay, well, if it's amorphous and ambiguous and ever-changing, can the steering committee decide that John Boehner shouldn't be Speaker of the House anymore because he's a disaster?
Yeah, right. All those guys are loyal to him.
Yeah, they're his hand-picked people. So the thing is, Boehner's going to reach out and touch you. You know, ooh, you get in Boehner's way. Bam, there you go. You're off the committee. And then there's this huge backlash. And I guarantee you right now the long knives are coming out and people are meeting in quiet corners saying, hey, Boehner's got to go.
Yep.
And
look,
you need to be encouraging that. That's why tweeting fire, you know, hashtag fire Boehner, emailing your congressman, mailing your congressman, going to Republican Party meetings, talking to people, saying you don't want this leadership. We got to have real conservative leadership. Otherwise, you know, we're done. It's time to close up shop on the Republican Party and start over with something new, a group that actually believes what it says, believes its own rhetoric, and will govern by it.
Exactly. And, I mean, look, the simple fact is that Boehner is so weak, so sensitive. He's got very thin orange skin. You want him basically, you know, running around.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
That's what you want him to do. You want him to just sit. You know that picture that you saw, the first picture after the election of a disheveled Mitt Romney pumping his own gas. And you were like, fucking douchebag, you lost. And it was kind of funny. And you were, even though you didn't want Obama to win, you were kind of relieved that it wasn't Mitt Romney, because that would have been the end of conservatism in the GOP. And you kind of just laughed at it.
The arrogance to come in and assassinate all the conservative, you know, rivals. You just, you wanted to see him lose. You didn't want to see Obama win. But God, talk about justice there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you want with Boehner. I mean, you want him in the fetal position, crying, leaving little orange stains on his pillow while he sucks his thumb because of what he just did. Not only what he did. Remember, this is a guy who professes to be this small guy, business guy, faithful Catholic. You know, I came up from Ohio, and now I'm Speaker of the House, and it's great. And this is a guy that got up on stage at the RNC convention and illegally, illicitly, and immorally put through a motion to give the presumptive nominee of the party full power over selecting the delegates. He's responsible for lying by saying that there were no objections to the motion, it was all scripted, that effectively 100% kills any democratic principle in the Republican Party process. This is what this guy did. Now, this is the guy who's going to raise taxes, okay? Now, it might not necessarily be much of a tax hike, but there's going to be, we're going to not raise taxes, but eliminate loopholes. Well, if you eliminate deductions, guess what? Taxes go up. And by the way, let's be clear about a couple of things. The way Obama at least says he wants to do it, he wants to take the top marginal rate on those who earn more than $250,000, who he refers to as millionaires and billionaires. Now, I could be wrong, but $250,000 is 25% of a millionaire. And a millionaire and a billionaire are separated by an order of magnitude of 1,000. So Obama is a complete idiot for lumping that in together. Anybody who buys it doesn't know basic math. But nevertheless, he wants the top marginal rate on those who make more than $250,000 AGI, after all the deductions, okay, to go from 35 to 39.6, which is where it was back in the Clinton years, okay? Boehner doesn't want the tax rate to go up at all, but he wants to eliminate and put caps on deductions. Guess what? By capping deductions and, quote, closing loopholes, you raise taxes on everybody who pays taxes. Because remember, only 53% of working people pay income taxes. So by eliminating deductions and loopholes, and what kind of deductions and loopholes are we going to eliminate? We're going to cap the mortgage deduction. Well, that's real smart because, you know, I bought my mortgage based on the fact that I could deduct this much of the interest so I can afford this house, and all of a sudden you're going to increase my housing bill by 20%. You might force me to lose my house. We're going to cap medical deductions. Oh, well, that's great. So because my prescription drug costs go up and my premium goes up because of the Obamacare bill, now you're telling me I can't deduct that either. So basically, Boehner's counter-proposal to Obama actually screws you on taxes more, even though raising taxes in this environment is stupid all around, because those people who earn more than $250,000, those are the people who hire everybody else. And if you take their money away from them, they're not likely to hire people. That's how stupid these things are. But that's precisely what they're going to do. And Boehner is so weak and such a wuss that he's not even using the power that he has, and he won't use it. So you got to get rid of him. So put the pressure on him, and put the pressure on him real hard. Make him cry. And look at the other tools that are available to him that he's not using. The first one that Gingrich – go ahead.
I was just going to say in terms of the, you know, activism, you know, it's sort of like if you see the ad for Zero Dark Thirty, the movie that's about to come out, you know, where they said, look, I'm not here to, you know, help you. I'm not your friend. I'm here to break you, right? Because there is no other – hidden program on a different floor that's going to do this stuff. You are it. And so right now you are the grassroots, and John Boehner's not going to go if the grassroots doesn't start pressing for him to go and start giving conservatives the spine. Because here's the other problem. You know, here in my state, we elected Ted Cruz. Other states, they have elected their Tea Party candidates, you know, to go up mm-hmm. with a fiscal conservative message. And mm-hmm. if the conservatives and the Tea Partiers and the Liberty Movement people aren't out there pushing behind the scenes, making things happen, letting rhinos know they need to quit being rhinos, and putting steel in the spine of the Tea Party activists, they're going to go up there and they're going to feel the pressure to sell out. And the leadership is going to say, yeah, they say they want all this stuff, but where are they now?
Yeah.
You know what? And if you don't go along with what the leadership does, we're going to run someone against you in your district and we're going to fund them. We're not going to fund you and you're going to be gone. And so all those people that say they want that stuff, but on election day, that's the only time they show up and they'll vote for anyone as long as we tell them to, no matter what you do.
Yeah,
so
you're
the people who have to stand up and make your voice heard and find others and encourage them to do the same, because there's no one else out there. It's just us. We're the ones.
And text to your point, I think you're absolutely right. Here's a couple of things. If you were Gingrich supporter, Paul supporter, working for a brokered convention and letting them know that Romney's a loser and he's going to lose, you had the temptation to tell all of those MitBots now, I told you so. You got to fight that, because the fact is a lot of those people are really conservative. A lot of them do believe in the things we believe in. They were just so scared of Obama they couldn't think clearly, and they supported Romney, and they know it. Okay, so rather than beating up on them for that, even though I did tell you so, you got to reform alliances and coalitions with them. It's about the Ron Paul revolution. It's about the Tea Party. You know, you might even have some disaffected Democrats or occupiers. It's about bringing people together to put pressure on these guys to get the real work done. You are never going to solve this problem if you don't start cutting the wasteful spending. Okay, you cannot raise enough revenue. You could tax 100% of all the income of every American that makes more than $150,000 a year. Okay? And it will not be enough to balance the budget. The only way, and of course that would completely devastate the economy. The only way you can do it is to cut spending. And guess what, Republicans? That means military industrial complex defense spending. And guess what? People who make more than $250,000 and are above the age of 65, it does mean means testing or certain cuts in Social Security. It means more premium cost share for you with Medicare. It sucks. Yes, you got a socialist progressive system in Medicare and Social Security. It's here, and you're going to have to suck it up because this is you got to pay for the sins of the past. You have to let go of your favorite little entitlement, because everybody in the country's got one. Whether it's a pharmaceutical company, an insurance company, an oil company, your Social Security check, your food stamp, or your Obama phone, everybody's got an entitlement. You got to let go of these things, because if we don't start cutting spending, we're all going to have nothing. And the only way these guys are going to do this is if you reform those coalitions, reach back out to those people who generally share 80% of the same ideas that you do. We just parted ways with certain candidates or certain policies or certain things. Educate them, teach them, and put the pressure on these guys. And speaking of putting pressure on, Tex, I know somebody here is really good at putting pressure on. In fact, he walks around with a big club putting pressure on people. Chris from Coalition of Freedom is live. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, good, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Good. Hey, I have a question. I mean, I got a lot of thoughts on some of these other things, but I have a key question, because Harriet had sent me some information earlier, and then she did it again in a closed chat. We have two different scenarios coming here. We have the Bush tax cuts disappearing here in January, correct? That's one thing. Then we have the Obama tax mastery coming with Obamacare. And we have two different scenarios. Now, I believe that Obama's up against the wall, and he can't, and he wants to force a tax negotiation to the upper 2%, because if they allow the Bush tax cuts to come across the board, which will affect everybody, not just the upper 2%, then his Obamacare comes down the pike, the Democrats will be voted out of office, period, because it would be huge to have a double down of those tax rates. What do you guys think of that as an idea?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Two things to keep in mind. One, the tax rates on the lowest brackets, they're not going up. I mean, that's a done deal. We're not going to fall off this cliff. They're
going to come
in at the 11th hour with some
bullshit. That's baked into the cake. That's coming
out. Yeah. So all of you who make less than 250 AGI, your tax rate
don't
is
worry
not going
about
up.
It.
Okay? Your tax rate's not going up. But if you work for some of those people who make more than 250, then don't expect a raise either. Okay, they're not going to give you one because they won't have any extra money. If you build things that these people buy, like, you know, expensive things like boats or airplanes or expensive houses, you know what? They'll probably delay a few years on buying more of those things. So if that's how you make your living, yeah, it's going to hurt, but you won't pay more taxes. Okay, see, that's the thing that people don't understand.
Or it's a coin toss if you're going to still get medical coverage through your employer. Because then it's, they may just say there's an individual mandate now. Why don't we drop coverage, and then everybody's got to get covered themselves. And guess what? I don't know how much your health insurance is coming out of your paycheck, but it's a heck of a lot less than it actually costs because the company's picking up sort of, you know, your cost is like the tip of the iceberg, and there's this big iceberg of cost underneath. Well, as an individual, you don't have much bargaining power with the insurance company, and so your rates are going to go up. And, yeah, they may put you into groups and all that kind of stuff, but who's negotiating on behalf of that group? You just sign your name to it, and you trust that someone negotiated some kind of deal with you. Well, who's the person negotiating that deal where you're going to get this big cut in your health insurance? You know, you're going to end up paying more for health insurance than you are paying for your paycheck now if you get dropped, and who knows if you do or not.
And the other thing about these exchanges and all this other crap that's supposed to be less expensive and less costly and all this kind of stuff, it's not. Think of it this way. The average cost that you pay in your health insurance that goes to marketing or the health insurance broker or the health insurance agent's commission is less than 2%. But guess who's there whenever there's negotiating time, who wants to re-up and re-earn that commission next year by helping you keep your costs down and negotiating with his company and getting you a good deal? It's that agent. Well, in those exchanges, it's gone, and you've got bureaucrats who know squat about the industry who are going to be bureaucratizing it for you. And no matter what they tell you about it costing less and the fact that they don't have a financial incentive to sell or whatever, what usually happens is they do have a financial incentive to sell. And what they normally have to sell is they have to keep creating clients. This is precisely why, until Newt Gingrich forced Clinton to reform welfare, all of those social workers weren't interested in having the people on welfare go back to work because they lose clients. And their job security is in having more people on welfare. And so what's going to happen with the same with the health insurance program? So the this is the failure of us as Americans to think these things through. We let the television and the pundits tell us what the issue is. The controversy is either the sequestration and the increasing tax rates, or we're going to have to do something about this fiscal cliff.
And they control the terms of the debate.
That's right.
You can only
debate
what they're willing to debate, and they're not willing to have a real debate.
Which is why nobody talks about the Patient Protection Affordable Health Care Act taxes. I mean, think about it. They named this thing Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And John Roberts told you, well, it's not that. It's a tax. So they have a tax that they call affordable care that nobody's talking about. And none of us are equipped to think about stage two, stage three, stage four. You know who's equipped to think about these things? Real economists like Ron Paul, believe it or not, Tom Woods, okay, these are people who've told us about these things, and guess what? Entrepreneurs, okay? Entrepreneurs are not the capitalists. The capitalists are the ones who bring the money to the table. Entrepreneurs are the ones who figure out what's worth risking the capital investment in and how to manage it and make it profitable. They think it's stage two, stage three. They're like, they're playing 3D chess, and the rest of us aren't even playing checkers. And that's why you're not seeing the consequences of these things. And the only way you're going to see those consequences is start listening to people who know what they're talking about, like Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich. And the only way you're going to make these politicians do anything about it is you have to put the pressure on them to use the tools at their disposal that in this brief human events article, Newt Gingrich just spelled out the program to put Obama in a little box and end this craziness.
I would argue they are playing 3D chess, but the 3D chess they're playing is increased government power, neutralized civil liberties, so that we are more in control. But they're presenting it to you as two-dimensional chess, which is why you can't understand what's actually going on. But what was the problem with health care in the first place, right? Why did they come up with this thing? It's too expensive. Health care is way too expensive. So we'll have the government take it over, and we'll reduce costs. We'll cover more people and we'll lower costs. How does that even work? And guess what? Now, because of that and all the taxes that go on top of that and the individual mandate, your employer could drop you now. And your employer, him or her, your company, it, whatever, dropping you is going to increase your health insurance costs. So how has it gone down? I thought the problem was the cost was too high. But that's not the problem. apparently because they're going to increase the cost on you. You know, and again, why is it so expensive? Because, look, back in the day, and many people here may remember this, you had a problem, you went to a doctor, right? And you paid, but the fee wasn't that much to go see a doctor, have him evaluate you and figure out what was wrong. And you just paid 20, 40 bucks, whatever, go see the guy. That was it. There wasn't all this additional cost and paperwork associated with doing it. You just talked to this person, and they said what was wrong, and they offered you a prescription. And then the insurance company came in, and they said, hey, what we'll do is, you know, we'll cover all these, you know, advanced surgeries that are very expensive, because people wanted insurance for advanced surgeries. And then the insurance company said, hey, we'll cover your routine doctor visits. Well, as a result, the cost of a routine doctor visit went through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because now there's paper processing to go along with it. There's bureaucratic overhead that goes with this stuff. And filing the forms, and this wasn't stamped, and, you know, this doesn't have a TPS cover sheet, and you don't have a 21B/6 on this thing, and so you can't process this form. Now it's coming back. So you added all this overhead. Now you have this administrative burden. Now the cost of everything is up because everything has this administrative burden associated with it. And so government solution to this is we'll put more administrative burden on it.
Yep.
And we'll take it over. If you thought healthcare was expensive before, wait till it's free. You'll never be able to afford it.
Exactly. That point is 100% right, and it's very easy for anybody to verify what you just said. Okay? Think of it this way. Most in the past, you used to go see your doctor in his office, where he worked alone with a staff person and a nurse, right? Now, doctors are forced to work in multi-doctor practices, and if you notice that there are about 4 administrative staff members for each physician. Just look at your doctor's office. When you go to that front desk, there's like 4 or 5 people behind that counter doing all sorts of stuff for each doctor. Why? It's because of all this crappy paperwork. The other thing is, I guarantee you, if I asked every listener right now what their doctor's visit costs, not one of you would know what it is. You might know that your copay is $10 or $15 or something like that, but you have no idea what that actual visit costs, what your doctor charges. Not only do you not know what your doctor charges, you don't know how much your insurance company is willing to pay. Your doctor had to increase the billing to a dramatic level to cover all these extra costs. So let's say that he charges $150 for the visit. Well, when he files it with your insurance company, whom he had to sign an agreement with in order to get your business, they say, well, yeah, you charge $150, but we're only willing to pay $97. And then, of course, you pay your $10, and then they pay the other $87.
I had to go to the hospital the other day because I had an issue, right? Okay, so go to hospital, minor emergency type thing. I have this issue. You know, can you guys help me with this thing, right? And so they said, yeah, sure, let's get you over to an x-ray machine so we can see what's going on. All right, so I drove there, I walked in, you get to the hospital, it's confusing, it's a maze. You know, I walked around for 15 minutes, I encountered the Minotaur, slayed him, dealt with the riddle of the Sphinx, and then I figured out where the heck I was supposed to be. I get there, go into the little room, okay, so this is my problem, this is my issue, you know, and can you help me out? So I said, okay, yeah, we'll take an x-ray of it, we'll let you know what's going on. Okay, great. So let's go over to the x-ray room. All right, so I hop off the table. Let's walk over there. I said, no, you got to sit in this wheelchair. What? I don't need to sit in the wheelchair. Let's just go over there and get the x-ray. They said, no, it's hospital rules. You can get injured on the – I could get injured while walking? How the hell do you think I got here? I was just traveling at 75 miles an hour to get here. You know, I think at my ambulatory speed through this hallway, I'm going to be safe. Well, guess what? I find out later, if you ride in the wheelchair, that's another claim. They get money because he rode in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
So they're cleaning up. And who's creating this? Government? Because they're paying them for this. Okay, well, if this person has to go to a wheelchair from destination A to destination B, so the hospital's making money on this thing. That's why they want you in a wheelchair, because they want to bill for it.
Well, they have to bill. They have to bill for every little thing because there's two reasons. One, they're not allowed to turn anybody away. And people that don't have health insurance use the hospital as their primary care physician, which is not what a hospital is for. A hospital is for serious problems, so they've got to make up those costs. Number two, they're looking for money wherever they can find it because of their extra bureaucratic compliance burden. And number three, the pharmaceutical companies, the medical equipment companies, and the insurance companies, not all of them, certain ones who did not want to compete in the marketplace, decided to hire lobbyists to go to Washington and mandate all of these things in insurance coverage and healthcare practices so that the smaller insurance companies that actually provided better cost services and the more efficient medical care providers would have to do all of these extra things, which adds to their cost burden and makes them uncompetitive, keeping the big guys at the top. So you've got this corporatist pharmaceutical industrial complex that's put all these mandates in. You've got these publicly owned insurance companies, and guess who owns the publicly owned insurance companies? That's right, the Wall Street banks. They own the insurance companies, so they force these things. And then, of course, they also are the ones who own the Federal Reserve, which has debased your currency so much that your costs have gone up. So now you're sandwiched with these excessive costs for basic health care that you need. So what do they do? They've created the problem. Now they come back and they say, here's the solution: more bureaucracy, more government, more mandates, more spending. Oh, and on top of all that, a tax.
As I said, when I worked in Washington, my boss said, look, in Washington, what we do is we start the fire and we sell them the water, right? Okay, so they started the fire of costs going up because it's just like the student loan program. Oh, we'll give people money for this. And then the companies realize, oh, we can get money for this. And you know what? It doesn't matter what it costs because they just pay the copay. So we'll put the cost on the back end to the government, and then eventually that starts bringing up the copay, the cost of everything. And then if somebody doesn't have health care insurance, woe be unto you because you have to pay bloated government prices for your health care because the health care industry has been inflating their costs in order to suckle more off of Uncle Sam's teat, just like the universities have been doing with the student loan program. Don't worry about the cost. The students will get student loans for it. So we can charge anything we want, and the students don't know that the value of their degree is less than the cost of their loan, right? And so here's the kicker with that story. So they say you got to go in a wheelchair, you got to go down the hall, you got to do all this. And I said, you know what? I don't think I need all that. I could take care of this. It's just people were telling me, multiple people, go to the hospital, go like, yeah, you got to get it taken care of. You know, whatever, I can man it out, I tough it out, go to the hospital. Okay, so I'm talking to them, and I said, you know what? Don't worry about it. I'm fine. I wouldn't worry about this thing. I don't need to deal with it. You know, it'd probably just go away on its own. And they freaked out. No, no, you can't leave. You can't. So now I got a choice between sitting in the wheelchair and going to the thing and charge you guys for it. You know, the listeners, you paid for that, right, through your taxes, okay? Or walk out. Well, they don't want you to walk out because now they got a liability issue. I mean, for God's sake, you can't do anything without the government being all over it and someone getting the bill. It's crazy.
It is. And the fundamental issue is that they cause these problems and then they cause more problems with solutions. You need to let the invisible hand of the marketplace deal with these things, and they won't because there's too much money in corruption until you put pressure on them. So you got to get busy doing that, and that means making the calls, sending the emails, sending the tweets, hitting them on Facebook, and telling your friends, your relatives, your tea parties, everybody to do the same thing. Download the Tex and Rex Show. I mean, you can just go to our page, right, and you can open up the archive link to this show. There's a place that says download. Right-click on that. You can download an MP3. So you don't even have to send somebody to the actual Blog Talk Radio or even our Facebook page. You can just email them the MP3 and just say, hey, look, listen to this. There's some good ideas in here, some things you can do. But I would appreciate it if you would follow the show in Blog Talk Radio and like our Facebook page and share it with other people. Let them make up their own mind about whether we're worth listening to or not. I know we can be a little crazy at times and do all sorts of irreverent stuff, but the fact is we're trying to deliver good information here. And if you have questions or want to talk about this issue, the call-in number is 646-649-1013. We got about 50 minutes left of airtime. Chris, you want to chime in on this particular conversation before I get back to the Gingrich article?
Yeah, let me. I just need to I need to back up a minute on the tax thing, because one of the things that you said in response to my question was taxes are not going up on the middle class. Okay. Let me reconfirm this.
Income tax.
Are you talking about the Bush tax cuts or the Obama system?
No. Basically, look, the way that, and I'm really sick of calling these things.
We were talking in that context about the Bush tax cuts.
Yeah, I got a little bit confused.
Yeah. The Obama things, they're coming across the board. And unless you wanted to continue, Chris, something on the Obamacare issue related to tax, I think will bring down Obamacare, but do you want to hear about that, or do you have something else you want to talk about?
Well, I want to hear about that, too, but let me just add to Chris's question and see if he has a follow-up. When I was talking, I was referring to income taxes, and this crazy thing about calling these things the Bush tax cuts, okay? They're not the Bush tax cuts, first of all. All right? They are the
it's
tax
your money,
rates
not
were,
Bush's.
Yeah, they were the tax rates that were put in place in 01 and 03. And incidentally, those, quote, tax cuts actually kept rates higher than when that jerk-off's father raised them from the Reagan rates back in 89 and 90, okay? So just keep that in mind. Number two, whatever the tax rate is, that's the tax rate. And the only way you get a cut is if they friggin' lower it for next year. By allowing it to go back to the Clinton rate, that's just a tax increase. Now, for political reasons, they're not going to increase taxes, income taxes, on anybody making less than $200,000. They're not going to do that. They've already figured that out. However, it's all bullshit, because if they cap the deduction, they're raising taxes in another way. If they tax the wealthy who are hiring people, they're raising your costs, even though they haven't raised your income taxes. And then, of course, all these Obamacare taxes are just another tax. See, here's the fundamental problem when we say stuff like, you know, 47% don't even pay tax. Well, 47% don't pay income tax. We have a shitload more taxes in this country because guess what? Whenever those people go to buy something, even if they're using their food stamp, there's a tax on that. There's a sales tax. There's a gasoline tax. There's a real estate tax. Oh, well, they rent. They don't own. Well, guess what? The landlord pays the real estate tax, so that's factored into the rent. So everybody in this country pays a tax of some sort. The only thing that this fiscal cliff bullshit is talking about is income taxes. And the only real legitimate constitutional rate for income taxes is zero. Not fair tax, square tax, flat tax, progressive tax, regressive tax, graduated. The only real constitutional income tax is zero. And that's where we have to get back to. And if we don't do it soon, we're all screwed. So, yeah, when we're talking about taxes, sometimes it can get confusing because we say tax. Well, what kind of tax? So the income taxes are not going to go up on people making more than $200,000, $250,000. They won't allow that. But the Obamacare taxes, those are locked and loaded. So did you have a further point on that, or should we go to tax?
Oh, I'm good. I just wanted to get that clarity because what you're saying is if they allow the Bush rates to go back, it would impact a lot more people than just the people over 250. But what you're saying is they're not going to let that happen. That's what the negotiations, quote unquote, are about.
Exactly. Theater. It's political theater. Because look, they know they're going to fleece you some other way. So they're just going. They're focusing on this one because they're going to be able to look like champions right after Christmas, in that only the wealthy are getting taxed. You regular people, we're here for you because John Boehner and Barack Obama reached across the aisle and in a bipartisan agreement, they chose to only raise taxes on those making more than $250. Hooray! That's the
rich.
John Boehner, greatest speaker ever. Also, look forward this summer to discussions of the VAT tax.
Oh yeah,
that will be coming up. But you know, as I mentioned, the issue with the Obamacare taxes, the way Congress wrote the law is, we pass the tax and we say that goes into effect. And it starts on this day. Well, you can't sue them when the law is enacted. You can only sue them after the tax has been paid because the government gets its money first. And that does try to get your money back from us. So a tax can't be litigated until it's been paid. And nobody pays the Obamacare tax until January 1st of 2013, in a couple weeks from now. And so expect that the lawsuits coming out of that to start soon afterwards. Because remember, Obamacare was litigated specifically under whether or not Congress had the power to compel you under the Commerce Clause to pay for Obamacare, right? And what they said is not engaging in commerce, you are still engaging in commerce because you could come up, and this is one of the arguments that was made by one of the Supreme Court justices questioning the government that was trying to make the case. So what if I walk down the street and I came up to two people on Pennsylvania Avenue who were sitting down eating lunch, two young people. And I said, what are you doing? And they said, we're eating lunch. And I said to them, no, you're not. You're participating in the market for death care benefit because both of you are going to die, and neither of you have death benefit coverage. Therefore, you need to get up right now, set your lunch down, and go buy death care benefits because you are participating in this market right now. And what the Supreme Court said in the decision is that you cannot use the Commerce Clause that way. And then Justice Roberts came through, so they shut that down under the Commerce Clause, which actually the Commerce Clause is like the freeway of destruction of the Constitution right now. They use the Commerce Clause of everything. Oh, because, you know, it's interstate commerce, therefore we can regulate it. So we can regulate everything because of, you know, transportation revolution. Now you can go anywhere. So
you sneezed across. You sneezed across state lines. You owe us money.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly. So now I can control it because it crossed state lines, right? So what they said was you can't use the Commerce Clause this way. So they then said, but since Congress has broad authority to tax, it may have the authority to do this as a tax. And as I said, you can't litigate a tax until it gets paid. So this lawsuit on Obamacare has not been brought to the Supreme Court as a tax. And I would suspect that when it comes up and they say that this is a tax authority, we're going to tax people for not purchasing something that we think they should purchase, I bet it gets struck down. Could you tax people for not buying a car? Could you tax people if they don't buy a boat? What if people don't buy enough Coca-Cola a year? What if the Coca-Cola Corporation comes and lobbies Congress and says everyone is obligated to buy 1 gallon of Coca-Cola a month? If you do not, you have to pay a tax, which is your non-Coca-Cola purchase tax. You think the Supreme Court's going to uphold that? No, I think they'll strike it down. And that'll be
I hope you're right, and if that is the case, then John Roberts will go down as one of the greatest strategic geniuses of all time. We'll see how that plays out. But the fact is that even if it gets struck down, which I tend to agree with you, I suspect that the pressure will mount, especially once people start – once people stop seeing merely the benefits of this legislation and actually start seeing the costs, and I suspect that the employees of Olive Garden and Red Lobster have already seen it, once people start seeing the real costs and then the Supreme Court decision, I think that it will get struck down. The only problem is that they would have conditioned us to expect the benefits, and then they'll make another proposal and we'll go clamoring for it. So you better get yourself educated, get others educated, because that's how they do things. I mean, keep in mind, they've been trying to pass nationalized health care since World War II, and they're going to do it again. Okay, just because we win a battle doesn't
Adolf
mean
Hitler
we won the war.
Adolf Hitler ran on nationalized health care. That's one of the things that propelled him into office. He's like, I'm going to give you free health care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, socialism has been on about this
too.
Since the turn of the century.
Yeah. So you know.
Too.
Yeah, you got to keep your eye on these things. And here's the thing. Look, we talk about all this stuff, and it can seem daunting. It seems complicated. It can seem depressing. It can seem like a major setback. Two things. One, I will say, number one, Mitt Romney's nomination and his loss is one of the best things to happen to conservatism
yep.
in a long time.
Amen.
Okay. Number two, Obama's second term, one of the best things to happen to this country in a long time. And number three, remember, you're now aware and you're awake and you're a little scared, okay? But you're awake, and a lot more people are awake than they were before. People are onto this duopoly game that, you know, you don't just vote for the R's or the D's because the D's are just as much warmongers and just as against civil liberties as the R's are for foreign adventurism and corporations. So it's a sham, and you're awake. And here's the thing. This battle never ends. We've been fighting this battle since before we declared independence, and we'll be fighting this battle until the end of time. The problem is we got comfortable and complacent for a while, and so we lost. And now we're awake, and that's something to rejoice about, and it's very exciting.
When you were born, you know, welcome to the war, the battle of you know, the power versus your individual liberty. You know, it's going to go on for your entire life. I want to say something, though, about the loss of Romney, because what they tried to do is, if Romney had won, they were going to blame the conservatives, and they were going to say that conservatives don't matter because Romney has proved that you don't need the conservative vote in order to win, and therefore the curse of rhinoism has been cured in Mitt Romney. If Romney lost, they were going to blame the conservatives and state that the conservatives dragged Romney too far to the right and made him unelectable because everybody saw him as this, you know, arch conservative somehow, and, you know, blame Murdoch and Aiken and all these other people for costing him the election. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. Romney didn't win because he's a massive rhino. But they already had the narrative cooked in to state that because Romney's a rhino and he's now a victorious rhino, we formed a new coalition, the new Reagan coalition, that we're going to call it the Romney coalition. All right, all this script was written, okay? The Romney coalition, with all the Romney Democrats who came over, what we have to do is start giving amnesty and doing all this kind of stuff, and we have to stop being the party of old white guys, and we have to start, you know, appealing to people based on skin color, their genitals, and the size of their paychecks, right? This is their thing, is we're going to become the Democrat Party. And we're going to compete with them because that's the center of American politics. Okay, so I was just chatting with a friend over the weekend, talking with him. He's Muslim, a good friend of mine, known him for a while. And we started talking about the election, right? And so as a Muslim, he's social conservative, right? He also... You know, and we talked about what is going on with the Republican Party. So I set up, like, there's three things essentially in the Republican Party, kind of writ large, Venn diagram, overlapping areas. You have social conservatives, you have national security conservatives, which is strong national defense and or neoconservatism, and you also have fiscal conservatives. And I kind of talked at length about all of these, which I won't bore you with. But by the end of the conversation, you know, I was saying, listen, you are a social conservative, right? You are not a neocon. You are someone who thinks that we shouldn't be all over the world invading every country on planet freaking Earth. Also, you're a fiscal conservative because you don't think the government should be spending money on all this kind of stuff and that we're going broke doing it. You are Ron Paul. And he said, well, I really like Ron Paul. Every time I hear him talk, I really like what he has to say. But this guy votes Democrat. So here's someone, Arab, and you're just talking about the principles, and he agrees on the principles. And I didn't have to get in, oh, you're Arab, you're Muslim, you fit into this box, and therefore I have to appeal to you as an Arab where I'm going to, you know, no, the principles of liberty appeal to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you win. That's why the Liberty Coalition is growing and the Republican Party is shrinking, because the Republican Party is trying to stretch the tarp further and further to the left so they can become the Democrat Party. And what they did in this election is they stretched it so far it ripped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's the other part of that rip? Okay, so you got 3/4 of it to come along with, you know, albeit reluctantly, to come along with rhinoism because you so demonized Obama. What was the fourth that rips? That's the liberty movement.
Yep.
And that's the future of the party.
And the
because
fact
the party's
is
gone that, too far.
Yep, and Tex, what the fact is that one of the best things for the liberty movement is that Ron Paul didn't win the nomination because he's not tainted with this crap. He's still got his integrity, and now he doesn't have to worry about his job. He's free to do all the things that they wouldn't allow him to do before. His voice is going to be bigger. And the important thing is that had the rhinos not blatantly violated their own rules, federal law, and any sense of decency and morality at the convention, Ron Paul might still be in the popular narrative, the kooky old guy from Texas that says crazy things. But because the evidence is overwhelming, now a lot of people might not know about it. It's your job. You're listening to this. It is your job to educate them. We have eyewitness accounts. We have transcripts. We have YouTube footage. This was a blatant theft. And guess what? It did not result in a victory. So not only did the party lose, but conservatism lost, and it was all because they cheated. And you can show people that, and that'll make them take a second look at Ron Paul. Because the fact is that if you are a true traditional conservative Republican, you are Ron Paul. If you go look at the traditional conservative Republican positions of the past, and I'm talking about from the 1920s on, when there were traditional conservative Republicans, they spoke and sounded and stood for the same principles as Ron Paul. The whole Goldwater-Reagan thing was very Ron Paul, and even the conservative revolution of 94 was, although I would argue that Newt's foreign policy is far more neocon than it should be and far more neocon than any Ron Paul supporter can swallow. The fact is, I think that Newt has become potentially less neocon over the years, and I think that this experience he had in Tampa has changed his views on a lot of things. I don't think that he thought his colleagues, both in the party and Fox News, would treat him the way that they did because they feared his victory, because right now there would be a lot of controversy and there would be a lot of contention, but we'd actually be getting things done. And instead of the Speaker of the House crying right now, it would be Obama. So I think that we all have to take advantage of the situation and take a look at what's going on. We got about 34 minutes of show left. We might go into overtime. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, the number is 646-649-1013. Go ahead, Tex.
Excellent. I just wanted to answer Diane's question. So why, if he likes Ron Paul, does he vote for the Democrat Party? Well, because he's been told he's brown. And the Republican Party is the rich white guy party. And so the Republican and Democrat parties are running fear camps, right? And so if you're a Republican, why did people who hated Romney, knew that he did not advocate their interests, that he was not a conservative, that he was the grandfather of Obamacare, that, you know, if you don't like Obamacare, Mitt Romney built that. They knew all this stuff and they went along with it. Why? Because they were in a fear camp, which is, if you don't vote for Mitt Romney, you know, Obama and his communists are going to take over, and the socialists and the, you know, whatever it is, the homosexual agenda and feminazis and all this other kind of stuff in America, as we know it, will be irrevocably destroyed and at the end of everything. But Romney was going to go do that too. He was going to go enact some symbols. You raised that in the debate. And so if you had a Romney-Boehner Congress right now, what do you think they'd be doing? They'd be doing the same thing that's going on right now. They'd be raising taxes on the very wealthy. I don't mind if I pay taxes. Why? I often, who starts a sentence with why? I don't know, but Romney does all the time. Just, that's one of those things you notice. That. Why, I often wonder. You know, it's like you time travel back in the 50s or something. But so he, on the Democrat side, he's afraid to cross over lines because he's in a fear camp too, which is like all these, you know, rich Republican white people, they're going to come, you know, and impose racism on the country and all this kind of stuff and take them back to a plantation. They're going to put you all back in chains or whatever, you know, Joe Biden was saying. And so everybody's finding this fear stuff because no one can have an intelligent conversation. And part of the reason you can't have an intelligent political conversation with your fellow American is because everyone's focused on the team and the success of their team. And they're saying, well, you don't like that Obama did this, but George Bush did that too. Right. Well, I didn't like it when George Bush did it either. So that doesn't justify the fact you're doing it. Let's agree that that was wrong, because everyone is stuck in this false left-right paradigm. I'm either in this camp or that camp, and there are no other alternatives. Well, the left and right conflict is not the major conflict in the country. The major conflict is between centralized power and decentralized power. And if you can have an intelligent conversation, usually started with illuminating this very fact, now they're willing to talk with you, and they're willing to say, well, I don't like it when Bush did Homeland Security. You know, I don't like when I get on an airplane, someone's grabbing my balls. I have a problem with that, you know. Why
well,
do we agree to that?
Half the population doesn't get their balls grabbed.
Exactly. Or my tatas, whatever the case happens to be, you know. So once you can see that, yeah, I think that's too far, because I think a lot of people on the right don't like this, you know. I used to fly airplanes all the time. I had to go all over the world getting on an airplane. I don't like flying anymore. I don't, because I don't want to deal with any of that nonsense, you know. So I suspect a lot of you don't either. So start saying, look, my party has not been good either. I mean, it dominated Mitt Romney, who for all intents and purposes is like white Obama. It's the same thing. So start having those real conversations, and you can start moving the dialogue and quit talking about your team versus their team. You know, quit, you know, as much as I hate to say it, you know, just focusing on all the wrongs of the Democrat Party, because there are things in the Democrat Party that are good, you know, that if you grew up on that team that you would see as good and you would support. And as a Republican, there are things on our team, more things, plenty of things that are good in the Jews support. But go have those conversations and find the common ground. And I think you'll find the common ground is around, look, I don't agree with the government sucking up this much power. Coalesce around that. And how do we get things back to the localities?
And the thing you have to avoid. Sorry, Tex, but just on that point, the thing you have to avoid, what you just very specifically and lucidly pointed out, avoid that knee-jerk reaction to attack the other guy for what he's doing, and then he attacks you for what your guy is doing, and you have a knee-jerk defense response. You know, because you voted for George W. Bush, you have to defend everything that he did. So, well, No Child Left Behind wasn't that bad. Medicare Part D was okay. Well, we did need a Department of Homeland Defense. It was very important to invade Iraq, all that kind of stuff. You don't have to defend it. All right, George W. Bush is not Mr. Republican. Remember, Karl Rove sold him to you as a compassionate conservative, okay, alleging that prior to George Bush's narrow victory in 2000, thank you, Karl Rove, what a great strategy that was, conservatism was not compassionate. That's what you're conceding with that point. So don't defend the party. Don't defend the candidate. And even if it's one you like, if you like Ron Paul, you like Newt Gingrich, you don't have to defend everything he does. There are some things you might disagree with. But look at the principles, because that's where it matters. And what Tex is saying is absolutely right. Reach out to people who you wouldn't normally reach out to, because guess what? On 80% of it, you probably agree. Because this isn't about the D's versus the R's, the libs versus the cons. This is about us versus them. Us being we the people, and them being the oligarchs who work for the corporatists and the bankers to screw us. That's what this is about.
There are less statists in this country than there are people who want their individual liberty and freedom and don't want their lives caught up in government. And the reason people on the other side are voting for the Democrat Party and things like that is they're seeing that when the Republicans come in, they want to enforce all the social conservative stuff to the federal government. You know, I don't want that. You know, I'm afraid of that. Okay, well, maybe we don't enforce that through the federal government. You know, let's let localities decide. Like, I'm here in Texas. We have dry county. Okay, there's some counties you just can't buy alcohol, right? Nobody complains. The locality decides. We don't have a national policy on these things, you know. Let devolved power back to the states. That's what most everybody in this country wants. And the reason everyone's getting afraid is because more and more things are being decided only on the federal level. Start with that conversation. You know, you don't have to talk about Republicans and Democrats. What is the federal government doing that you don't like? What are you afraid of? It's the Liberty Coalition is potentially a bigger coalition than both the parties combined.
Exactly.
You know, if you build the right, proper Liberty Coalition, you will have over 50% of this country in it, and the third parties will be the Democrats and Republicans jockeying over which one takes over the other one because they're the statist party.
Right.
That's right.
And Chris has brought this up before. I mean, how many people are not affiliated with either party of current
likely voters? Over 40%. I think over 40%.
So that's bigger than both of the other parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so what does that tell you? And guess what? I would argue that half the people in the D camp and half the people in the R camp, okay, are not in that camp. They just happen to identify with that camp more than the other camp. But you're not in that camp. There's a lot of crossovers. All this bipartisan crap that they talk about, whenever they say bipartisan, it means they're agreeing on a statist corporatist agenda. When we say cross party lines, it's because we agree on liberty. And take a look at, for example, two retiring congressmen that are both painted by their own party as kooky, crazy, fringe guys who do a lot of good work, and that's Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul. And you know what? I don't agree with Dennis Kucinich on a lot of stuff, but there are some things on which I do because, one, at least he's principled, and two, he is, in most cases, for more liberty. Granted, he's also a socialist-type Democrat and has some kooky ideas there, but the fact is there are some things on which we agree, and he and Ron Paul have worked together in the past because of that agreement. Look at Ralph Nader. I won't accuse him of being a conservative, but who hosted the second alternate party debate with all four candidates? He had Virgil Good and Gary Johnson there. Now, there's very little that Ralph Nader agrees with Virgil Good and Gary Johnson on, but he believes in liberty. So that's what we have to focus on. I think it's very, very important. And then you got to look to somebody like Newt Gingrich because he's got the record, he's got the experience, and he knows how to get it done. And back to this article, you know, he talked about the power, and he says that the most important power that the House has, that John Boehner can use, which he hasn't even talked about, is appropriations. And
right.
Newt says, the most powerful House tool is appropriations. This power goes all the way back to Runnymede and the signing of the Magna Carta. If you're not familiar with that history, I suggest you look it up because it was part of the thread over the last 800 years in British common law. And, of course, there are ebbs and flows and backs and forths, but that's kind of where the origins of our ability to be the republic that we are started. So when you run across the Middle East trying to impose democracy at the end of a gun to a tribal people who have been under imperial control for damn near 2,000 years, they don't have the cultural, you know, basis for what we've developed over the last 800 years. So that's a very important thing. Look it up, Magna Carta, Runnymede. If the people's representatives don't appropriate the money, the president can't spend it. House Republicans should be prepared to suspend all appropriations except national security and public safety. They should selectively zero out the least popular of the president's initiatives and agencies. He can attack the House all he wants, but he can't spend money without its approval. The conservative movement would be galvanized by such a display of firmness. So just think about that. Obama has no money to spend unless John Boehner gives it to him. You'd better tell John Boehner not to give him the money.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. How many times in the last 4 years or last 2 years since we've had control of the House have you heard the news and the Republicans and the news and Fox and all the radio talking heads screaming and hollering about the money that Obama's spending and where he's spending it, including some of the new stuff about all the mosques that are being rebuilt around the world, restored around the world by Obama? And they just keep doing this over and over again, and I keep saying, it ain't his money. We're given, the Republicans are giving it to him. But for some reason, the narrative just doesn't seem to understand this. Go ahead.
Well, the media is not going to give you that narrative, but that's the fact. I mean, look, this is the same crappy reason that all the good stuff that happened in the late 90s, the Democrats take credit for, that Clinton did this, the Clinton tax cuts, the Clinton balanced budget. Well, no. I mean, yes, I'll give Clinton credit for having signed those things, but it was Newt that forced him to it by shutting down the government. But revenue bills originate in the House. All of those things were done under Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House. And all of this crap that Obama's doing, well, it's being done under John Boehner as Speaker of the House because he's got the purse strings. And that's what you have to understand. So don't defend him because he's in your party. Don't defend him because he's more conservative than Nancy Pelosi. He's giving Obama all the money to do all the things he's doing, the drone strikes, the president kill lists, the indefinite detention, you know, the prison towers that they're putting up in cities, the increase in the debt ceiling. And watch him. Part of this deal is going to be to take the debt ceiling conversation out of Congress and just make it an executive power, which Ben Bernanke would be very happy about, because then he can quantitative ease into infinity without ever having to have a public display in Congress. The fact is that the debt ceiling should be zero. No debt. The only time, in fact, the Founding Fathers really only gave the government power to go into debt for acute situations of national invasion where you had to raise money to have an army or deploy the militia to defend the borders. It wasn't designed.
Well, they were afraid of a standing army. Remember that, too.
We're not supposed to have one. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said the only thing more dangerous than a standing army are banking establishments, and he's right. The Constitution gives us a navy.
What if the banking establishment runs the standing army?
Then you might invade Iraq under the pretext of weapons of mass destruction and then have a false flag nerve gas situation in Syria so you can invade them, because whatever you say about Bashar Assad, one thing is, he doesn't have a Rothschild-controlled Goldman Sachs bank in his country. Could that be why we're going in there? Just think about that. So, you know, the simple fact is that, that appropriations is a very powerful place, and Newt Gingrich used it stupendously. When he shut down the government, it's because he was basically telling Clinton, I'm not giving you the money to run your department. It's over. Now, everybody freaks out about that, but guess what? Social Security checks went out because those are non-discretionary. Medicare, non-discretionary. And military, non-discretionary. Okay, not the you know new weapons and stuff, but actually funding that's part of the that's why we have a National Defense Authorization Bill to keep that going. But all of those things didn't stop. It was you know Parks and Recreation, Department of Education, and all this other garbage that we don't need. That's what stopped. And he used it superbly to force Clinton to the negotiating table. And the negotiating table was Clinton and Gingrich in a room saying, this is the thing I'm not budging on. Well, this is the thing I'm not budging on. Okay, let's talk about all those other things and see where we can come to an agreement to get the people's work done. So that's a very powerful place, and you need to pressure John Boehner to use it. Let him know that you are aware that whatever crap Obama does is Boehner's fault because Boehner gave him the money. Okay? Mm-hmm. The next powerful area is oversight. Now, this is a really key point. There are well over 100 subcommittees which can be holding oversight hearings. Like the Lilliputians tying down Gulliver, these subcommittees can gradually educate the country about the waste, the cronyism, the corruption, and the radicalism existing throughout the Obama executive branch. The daily reports of hearing after hearing and scandal after scandal become a Fabian strategy wearing down the Obama juggernaut and exposing its downside. This is real power politics right here. There is also a positive side to the hearing and oversight process. The House Republicans should ally with the 30 Republican governors. Many of them are doing very smart things which could be applied to Washington. All of them can highlight areas in which Washington is forcing waste and inefficiency on their state. Okay? They give the House Republicans 30 star witnesses to lay off hearings. Several former governors would make outstanding witnesses. This is about incorporating federalism into the conversation and having the states exert their authority on the Washington conversation. The combination of positive reform ideas and negative coverage of waste and scandal could make every subcommittee a star in its own right and create more communications than the White House could cope with. What's John Boehner's response to the power of using these committees to expose this stuff? He removes Justin Amash, Husselkamp, Jones, and Schweikert, because mm-hmm. they criticized him. They didn't vote for the Ryan Faux cut budget and all this stuff because they're real conservatives. These are the men of steel. These are Michael Steele, 2010 Tea Party victors, and John Boehner just sidelined them after losing.
Well, I wanted to add something that I've said many times. Over the lack of news coverage when they talk about unemployment figures or economic shifts is that they never separate out the, you know, you've got, what, 30 governors now, 34 states, 30 states that are controlled by Republicans, and they're turning things around, which means they're improving the economy. People are going back to work. They're affecting the unemployment numbers, not Obama. And nobody talks about this in the news, and I don't understand it.
Well, remember, the news media is, you know, 95% of it is owned by six corporations that have an interest in centralized power in Washington. They don't want you to start thinking that governors and state legislatures have power. They don't want you to know anything about grand juries and sheriffs. They don't want you to know that Washington, D.C. is truly irrelevant if you just simply exercise the muscles that you've got. But, you know, we're too busy beating the shit out of each other over cheap cell phones at Walmart and threatening to stab each other so we can get the latest Xbox and camp out, you know, all night to get the newest version of the iPhone. But we won't lift a finger to tweet or phone call, or email.
The major thrust of regulation is not to protect you. That's how it's sold. It's in order to limit the competition to big business. That's its essential purpose. That's why you have all this regulation. I'll give you an example, right? So you have the RIAA, the Recording Association, or whatever. You know what I'm talking about. The people who make the CDs. I forget what the I stands for. But anyway, so they own the record companies, right? So then there's this guy who sits in his garage for a period of about 1 to 2 weeks, and he programs Napster. And by programming Napster, this happened, you know, 1999, 2000, and by programming Napster, he brings the entire recording industry to its knees. That's what they're terrified of. Innovation. They didn't think of that, right? These recording companies, they sign up 200-plus artists onto their labels. They promote 15 of them. Mostly Britney Spears stuff, Boyz II Men, all this kind of stuff. You know, all these artists, you're like, who are buying these records? But they're jamming it down your throat everywhere you go, right? But nobody likes their music, and nobody's purchasing it. It's like little kids or something like that, you know? But nobody's buying the albums. Who owns these records? I don't know anybody who owns these records. Even when I was young, this stuff was happening. They were throwing these big bands up stating that they were the important ones, but nobody wanted to hear it, right? So Napster gets through all that stuff, and you can actually go through and you can find what you want and what your real interests are, and things aren't broken down into there are five genres, and you must listen to music in one of these five genres, and in those five genres, there are five artists, and you must listen to the music of these five artists in these five genres. You know, so this is the purpose of regulation, is to prevent competition from coming up and revolutionizing these industries overnight, because they could go away. You know, if the horse and buggy or the stagecoach industry had been better organized, they could have stopped the onslaught of the automobile, or at least held it back for 20 years. And that's what a lot of this regulation is designed to do. There are innovations out there that can transform this economy, but the established interests don't want to let that happen. For instance, you know, I'll just throw something out there you guys may or may not have been aware of, but your internet provider. So, you know, we're on Blog Talk Radio, so you're hearing us through the internet in one way or another. You get the internet through your phone company, right? But there's actually three ways to get the internet through your home, at least, well, there's four, now that I think about it. You can get it via satellite, okay, so there's satellite internet. You can get it through your cable company. You can get it through the telephone. And one way people don't know is you can get it from your power utility. Because everyone has electricity coming into their house, and what's electricity? A bunch of electrons, right? Well, if you start pulsing the electrons just right, it's no interruption in your power, but it's communicating essentially via Morse code or ones and zeros, which is all the internet is, straight in your house. And so it's internet over, you know, the electrical grid. And it's here. You could get this, but they don't want you to have it because they don't want, all of a sudden you have all this competition, you know, Cox Cable has got to compete with Comcast, it's got to compete with AT&T, it's got to compete with Verizon and everything. You add that in there, oh my God, you know, now it's chaos. No, I don't understand the market. Anybody can participate in this thing. Now it's a free-for-all, and I can't understand, I can't plan for the future because there's all this disruptive technology. You know what we got to do? Stop that disruptive technology because it's creating too much disruption. That's the purpose of regulation.
Yep. And that's what you just described is classic corporatism. And, you know, we had a show on that.
And that's also true for political regulation. Same difference.
That's right. Well, I mean, look at, right? John McCain, the McCain-Feingold bullshit that, you know, he puts this thing through, and then you get the Citizens United decision, and you get all this chicanery with Crossroads GPS and all the super PACs and all the crap that Organizing for America and all that kind of stuff. And John McCain complains about it. I'm like, hey, dickhead, you're the one that created it. You know, quit screwing with it. Now, I think that there do need to be some rules because we need to get as much money out of the electoral process and make it more competitive, more fair, and less expensive. And you do need to have regulations for that. But that, you know, is properly in the states, even for federal elections. Because remember, the federal election isn't really held on a federal level. The federal election,
right,
when you vote in November, you vote for your state electors, who then go and vote for the president. In fact, this week sometime, right, a Wednesday, I think, usually December 8th, which is also the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is a pretty important issue if you're focusing on social conservative values, because it's 40 days before the 40th anniversary of the horrible Roe v. Wade decision, which is a big deal for most people in this country on one side or the other. And the fact is that the only way these things get settled is at the state level, okay? So you really got to get to know your state rules, contact your elections board, find out what's going on, check with your local senator and your delegate. You have a larger voice because you're a larger percentage of the constituency there than you are for the guys you send to D.C. and they're more likely to listen to you, and you have more sway there, and you got to exercise that power and let them know, hey, look, I don't like this stuff. I don't like what's going on. I want you to do something about it. I want more open elections. I don't want these people like John Boehner just sitting up there on their thrones dictating who gets to sit on what committee. The people voted in 2010 for these guys. They voted for the principles that these guys are fighting for, and because those guys stood up and fought for those principles, you shot them down? How dare you, sir? How dare you? You know, that's the kind of conversation we have to have. You have to be the voice, because this is how we win. If you rely on the other guy to do it, or, well, I voted, so now the guy's going to do the job for 2 years, and if I like what he did, I'll vote for him again, and if I don't, I won't. If that's the extent of your involvement, then just put the shackles on right now and hand over your paycheck. You don't care. You're not an American. You're not a patriot. You know, putting that stupid little I voted sticker on your friggin' lapel when you go on the first Tuesday in November to vote for this asshole or that asshole, and you get your little I voted sticker and you think that that's your civic duty and you're a patriot? Bullshit. You're an insipid loser who's going along with the system. That's not a patriot. A patriot stands up when it's necessary to stand up. It's not just on election day. So you better get involved now.
I voted ... for a rhino! !
Exactly. You know, there's nothing patriotic about voting. If you don't know who you voted for, you don't know what you voted for, and they keep doing the same crap, and in between elections, all you do is watch the news and bitch about it, or listen to O'Reilly or Hannity and those other stupid cheerleaders go, yeah, he's right, man, that's crazy, the US of KKK and Bill Ayers, and he's right about that. Well, guess what? Obama got reelected because of that crap, okay? So get involved. Get real. And, I mean, when someone gives you the roadmap. I mean, Newt Gingrich in this, I don't know, 3-page article very succinctly just laid out a blueprint for the Republicans to completely obliterate Obama, and instead what we got is this orange-faced shitbag crying on TV telling me, I'm standing up to the guy, I'm not going to raise taxes on people who make more than $200,000, we're just going to take away their deductions. Screw you, Speaker Boehner.
And meeting with him and not telling what the outcome of the meeting was, because let me tell you, he just sold out.
Of course he did.
I guarantee
he's a weakling.
A deal was just struck, and they didn't announce it.
He's a weakling. Well, you know, we only got about 8 minutes of live show left, so if we're going to get through these points, we're probably going to go in overtime. So if you want to hear it live, you need to call in before the next 8 minutes are up. The call-in number is 646-649-1013, 646-649-1013. If you are not inclined to listen now, then by all means, check us out in archive. And please share the show. You can download the MP3 and send it out as an email. You can always go to the Tex and Rex page in Blog Talk Radio, that's Tex and Rex Show, and listen to the archives through the Internet. And please go to our Facebook page, which is the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook, and like the page, and you will get updates of the postings. And if you look in the comments section under the shows that are posted on Facebook, there will be links to articles and video clips that are about the topic at hand. As always, Tex and Rex are talking about breaking the duopoly, which is this false image we have of two parties and that our votes matter for something. That has to be destroyed because this is the kind of crap that you have. But going forward with what else Newt tells us that John Boehner isn't doing that he should be doing, legislation. There's a reason that we call the Congress the legislative branch. Newt goes on to say, legislation is action. It is fact. It is reality. House Republicans should start by scouring the bills introduced by House and Senate Democrats for every good idea. Oh, this is Newt Gingrich, right, acknowledging that the Democrats sometimes have good ideas. Hey, guess what? Sometimes they do. And that's where we can have agreement. Traditionally, the Democrats have been the party of civil liberties. Well, who doesn't like that? I mean, do you disagree with them about that? I don't, but guess what? These same Democrats have a president who signed the 2013 NDAA bill and the 2011 one with indefinite detention, and we're using illegal drone strikes all over the place. Look, the first thing that Obama did when he got reelected was illegal drone strikes in Yemen against terrorists. Now, maybe they were terrorists, maybe they weren't, I don't know, but I know that we have, in fact, killed American citizens who may or may not have been terrorists. One of them was a 16-year-old kid on Obama's order with no due process. That's the kind of bullshit that you want? keep voting for these assholes. But if you truly want civil liberties, take. Yeah.
Yes. Meanwhile, we're picking up enemy combatants in Afghanistan who are actually working for al-Qaeda who are not American citizens, and we have the ACLU stating that they need constitutional protection.
Yeah,
while American citizens on the same battlefield, we're just wiping them out with drone strikes. Anybody see anything strange here? Not making sense?
Yeah. Well, it only makes sense when you understand that it's concentrated power and that they do not represent you. They represent some other interests. But Newt spells it out. Look for the good ideas in the Democrat bills. Every chance House Republicans have to pass a bill introduced by a House or Senate Democrat, they build an irrefutable record of bipartisanship. Let Harry Reid and President Obama explain why they oppose Democratic bills passed by the House Republicans. Put them on the defensive. That's a smart strategy. In addition, House Republicans should look for specific, narrowly drawn, positive ideas and pass a vast series of small bills. Of course, that entails not worrying about your Christmas vacation and running home, but actually staying and working, which is what you were hired to do, you fools. Let the Democratic Senate either start behaving responsibly, right, these guys haven't passed a budget in 4 years, or let it become known as the graveyard of obstruction. Either a lot of bills will be sent to the president, or the theme of constructive Republican House versus an obstructionist Democratic Senate will become a major factor in the 2014 elections. This is good for the Republican Party, but more importantly, this is good for conservatives, because the rhinos don't like small, simple bills that spell out specific principles. They like gigantic omnibus bills that nobody knows what's in them so they can shove their corporatist crap in there. If you have a series of small bills that say what they mean and mean what they say and are clearly spelled out, then you're going to put principle ahead of party, and that's good for conservatism. He goes on next to talk.
Party
go ahead.
Actually believed in conservative principles and wanted to inspire the base and wanted to win in the future and also govern effectively and believe what they were saying. They would do this, and they would go fight for every bill. They would go out and evangelize for what they just did. As Gingrich has said, they would send all of the House Republicans back to their home districts to talk about what they're doing, go on their local news stations, talk about, you know, what has just been accomplished so that the people in their district know, and Republicans wouldn't feel defeated because they're like, there are still people tending to the flame and fighting the good fight. I am emboldened by this. I want to see more of this. Yes, I agree with what that person says, and now I feel confident voting for this person, advancing these ideas and everything. And what's going on right now with most Republicans? They're just defeated, like, well, we lost the country. I guess it's just over. I mean, that's not a strategy. But you know what? I think that's Washington's strategy, is to defeat people who feel that the government's too big and just say, well, you can't do anything about it. And now your party, the Republican Party, is going to go sell out publicly on television, and you're going to feel defeated by that. And John Boehner doesn't care because, you know what? If you actually send conservatives there, he's going to try to defeat them. One by one, or en masse, and he's been doing it behind the scenes. You're not defeated. This guy, you have to identify who the foe is. And this gets back to what we were talking about with the 2012 election. I know we're coming up on the hard break, but, you know, you're going to the field of battle, which is the 2012 election. The other side comes towards you. You're in your, you know, foxhole or whatever. And you're like, okay, I'm going to defend this position, and we're going to, you know, stick up for our conservative principles. And you turn around, and you look at the commander's stand, and there isn't, like, a conservative there, like a Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul, someone, you know, who can actually take on Washington. Mitt Romney comes in, you know, like a thief in the night with a stiletto and gets rid of everybody, and now he's in charge. And guess what? He's on the other side. You know what you do? You abandon the position. I can't fight this war. That's what's going on. You got Boehner. So you can't go to battle and have these fights in Washington until you fix what's wrong with the leadership of the Republican Party.
Yep. Yeah, and I would argue that John Boehner is more dangerous than Barack Obama, because John Boehner holds the purse strings, and John Boehner is allegedly conservative. We got 90 seconds of live air left. If you want to hear the rest of the show, we'll probably go at least a half hour more. Call-in number is 646-649-1013. You've got a minute to call in if you want to hear it live. Otherwise, check us out in the archives, and Tex and Rex will be back here. Same bat time, same bat channel next Sunday. So please tell your friends, and also check out the archives. Most importantly, take action. Put the pressure on John Boehner. In fact, Here he is again. He's just called in, and I'm going to let him on. Mr. Speaker, you are live with Tex and Rex. No, Mr. Speaker, I know. But see, the problem is that you've got the purse strings, and you keep giving the money to this guy, and he keeps putting forward a socialist agenda, and I know it's your fault. Oh, I just stop crying, get your thumb out of your mouth, okay, and actually put these four conservatives back on their... No, look, stop. You know what? I can't take this. I'm going to have to mute you. You're just, it's just ridiculous. You can't talk to this guy. You can't talk to this guy. But put pressure on it, all right? Tweet out, hashtag Fire Boehner, email him, call his office. You're going to get some young staffer who's going to pick up the line. Just tell him, hey, what the hell is this guy doing? Okay, and if you're in his district in Ohio,
staffer
please.
Probably knows him really well and doesn't like him either. You may be able to speak like, yeah, I don't like this guy either. He sucks. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and if you're in his district in Ohio, man, I mean, you guys, you know, you're really the one. So just, you know, beat the crap out of this guy. Look, Karl Rove has already been exposed, all right?
Thank God.
That's a good thing. I guarantee you that if we keep this pressure
Morris.
On, Karl Rove will not be back. Dick Morris will not be back to put forward their bullshit agenda in 2014, and we can actually start winning some of these races with real conservatives. But it's not going to happen if you don't put the pressure on this guy. John Boehner is absolutely terrible, and don't allow them, if we succeed here, you got to make sure that you don't watch for that bait and switch, because you don't want a Paul Ryan, you don't want an Eric Cantor. Okay, you want a real conservative, capable speaker, and much as it's legal and possible, and I would love to see it be Newt Gingrich, that's not likely. But hopefully we can find somebody who will at least listen to Newt Gingrich for his experience and follow some of this blueprint here, which is just so laid out so well that the Republicans could completely obliterate Obama better than they would have had Romney won, because we wouldn't be having this conversation. Everything would already be done, and we'd already be screwed with more taxes. But after, you know, we've addressed the power that he's not using, appropriations, oversight. In fact, oversight, he completely screwed it up by silencing conservatives, legislation, and then communications. Now, here's the thing. The message should be so simple and appealing to so many people. Instead of worrying about, and Tex brought this up earlier, instead of worrying about what color somebody is, or their ethnicity, or their religion, or their genital area, or their wallet, okay, as far as a target demographic for your party, just communicate the message of conservatism better. Because the conservative message is universal. It doesn't matter if you're a woman, a Latina, a left-handed cross-dressing lesbian. It doesn't matter, because conservatism really is appealing if it was communicated properly. And what he talks about here, he says, House Republicans should study the period, look, he goes 1824 to 1828. The Jacksonians were enraged by the outcome of the election of 1824, and they spent 4 years steadily undermining the administration of President John Quincy Adams. Their use of the Frank and of congressional communications is a masterpiece. In 1996, a concerted, methodical House Republican effort enabled us to reform Medicare and win the communications argument. In 2012, the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee did a splendid job of defeating Mediscare. The House Republican leaders cannot out-communicate the president. It is a structural impossibility because of the White House command of communications. However, 200-plus House Republicans, some will never cooperate, yeah, that's right, Boehner, we're talking about you, can more than overmatch an executive branch. Now, what that means is, instead of letting John Boehner and Eric Cantor be the tip of the spear, you take every single Republican and have them go to their districts and have them get on the television shows and communicate the message of conservatism. Smaller constitutional government, more efficient and less burdensome taxation, okay, and diffusion of power to the states. These are great things that if you communicate it properly, people have a hard time disagreeing with it unless they happen to be statists, in which case, why are you talking to them? That's the enemy. So that's what
everyone,
they need to focus on.
In my experience, when I talk to Democrats, and I have a lot of friends who are lifelong Democrats that just happen to grow up in that, you know, club, I have a friend whose father was head of his local union. It was a railroad union, but, you know, close friend of mine going back, you know, decades. But he actually, you know, I talked with him. He started voting Republican for a while. He left the Republican Party. You know why? Because there started being rhinos. And he's like, well, what is the point of this stuff? But if you start talking about the principles of liberty, they appeal across all party
yes.
lines. You talk to people
yep.
who are far left. You talk to people who are Democrats. You talk to Republicans. You talk to people of any background, ethnicity, religion, skin color, you know, gender, all of that kind of stuff. It appeals to all of them. That's how you create a coalition that can win, not this narrow-minded, you know, sort of throw everyone into a group, find their one issue, and then, you know, go say, hey, I'm going to go pimp your issue up on Washington. All you do is create division in society around all these groups. I thought America, the modern America, was trying to get past that of throwing everyone into groups and then stating, I have these rights and you have those rights. We should all have the same rights. And those rights should be the rights of individual freedom and liberty, and our localities should be in control because our localities know us, and our local elected officials should know us.
This is why Ron Paul was so popular. Look, you know, every time they would ask him about, you know, well, what about gay rights and what about women's rights, he goes, I don't like to talk about that kind of stuff. Because if you're talking about rights, then it's a human right or a civic right or a constitutionally guaranteed right or a natural right. And that's universal to every human being. And that means the preborn, it means the aged, it means blacks, whites, Latinos, Hispanics, men, women, it means everybody. So if you have a message that appeals to everybody of liberty, of restrained government, not chaos, but a government that actually works efficiently and works well and does the very limited things it's supposed to do and does them well and doesn't do all the other crap it's not supposed to do and doesn't do well at all, that's appealing to everybody. It doesn't matter if they're liberal or conservative, or Democrat or Republican, it's appealing to everybody, and they just have to get out of that mindset of these parties. So you have to break your mindset of that duopoly. And it's a beautiful message that Republicans can communicate effectively if you put the right Republicans out there. Quit giving me faux, you know, Republicans like, oh, Marco Rubio is appealing to Latinos. Why is Marco Rubio appealing to Latinos? Because he's Latino? I mean, come on, give me a break. Who are the popular people that we look up to, right? Sports heroes, movie stars, right? I mean, you know, that's kind of the, sadly, the pop culture we're in. Well, if you're a patriot and you like action movies, right? You like Bruce Willis, you like Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, all the guys that are, you know, back in the recent Expendables movie, right? Well, people like those guys. They don't have to all be white or Italian-American to like Sylvester Stallone or Bruce Willis. You don't have to be a bald person to like Bruce Willis. So why does it have to be the case here in politics? Why can I only like the guy that has the same skin color as me? That's just stupid. Okay, you go out there. Look at Ron Paul, right? Ron Paul is an old, conservative, rich, white guy from Texas. So ostensibly, if we're going by Democratic identity
rich,
politics,
well-to-do, I would say.
Well, you know, relatively... excuse me, wealthy compared to your average American since he's a physician, well, then ostensibly by our Democratic identity politics that the Republicans are playing so well these days, only 76-year-old white males who have a background in obstetrics should even listen to this guy. Yet everywhere I go, and I remember when I came back from Tampa, took a long ride, took us a week or so up the East Coast through Georgia, we went to Savannah, through the Outer Banks, through Virginia. Just about everywhere we stopped, we met people who were aware of the Liberty Movement, who loved Ron Paul, who wanted to see him go forward, who were very excited about it, and were very disappointed to hear what the Republicans did at Tampa. And I can tell you this, those people that I met and talked to were young, were old, were black, were white, were recent immigrants, were of different ethnicities and different religions, and they all loved Ron Paul because of his message. So communications is key. Quit playing identity bullshit and tell me that Latinos are only going to vote for Republicans if you put out Susana Martinez or Marco Rubio. That's not true, because Latinos would have overwhelmingly voted for the old white guy, Ron Paul.
Yep.
Well, Rex, and that's true. I mean, we went across this country, and everywhere we went, there were people talking about Ron Paul, right? Everywhere, people were talking about Ron Paul. You know, it's not an exaggeration. And, you know, we drove into that convention. you and I heading through Florida, down the highways and everything, didn't see a single, well, I saw one, and you saw one too. And
I think it might have been
the same color, and it might have been the same car. We saw one car with a Romney Ryan bumper sticker on it. You know? And
yep.
I saw,
yep.
I drove from Texas over there, okay? So I'm heading up I-10 and all that kind of stuff. Ron Paul stuff all over the place. I'm passing on the highway. They usually weren't passing me. I don't know. Maybe I'm a speed demon. But, you know, I see like a Ron Paul guy beat my horn, you know, give him a thumbs up. But they expected to be, you know, getting curses and all that kind of stuff from Romney types or whatever. But, you know, that's generally a bad sign. But it's a good sign for the Romney people. It's generally a bad sign for the success of the Republican Party that your nominee does not have support. But it's a good sign for the Liberty Movement because I think the Romney-Ryan campaign was the bridge too far. You know, it was the point at which, you know, the Hindenburg happened, it docked, the whole thing went up in flames, and that's it for dirigibles. You know, you just don't do them anymore.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's the point that that's it for Rhino. And it's time for the Liberty Movement to get its due. It's time to reorganize the Republican Party along the lines of standing up for what it claims to actually believe in, to stop trying to purge actual conservatives from the party, to embrace them and start purging the rhinos who were starting the purges in the first place. Because Boehner, going way back, had the long knife out early on
mm-hmm.
Gingrich because the guy was cutting the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
These are the people that have to go for the Republican Party to survive. And you know what? I don't care about the Republican Party. What I do care about is people, like-minded individuals who want to accomplish the same thing. Right now we have, it's like a company, a corporation. We have a corporate shell or a political party shell that we all are inside of and are working with. But you know what? If it's so corrupt that it cannot stand anymore, that party is nothing but us.
Bankrupt.
So quit hanging on to the logo and the swoosh.
Mm-hmm.
Move over into a new organization.
Yep.
If you
and the thing is that you got both options, and they're both on the table, and employ both of them, depending on your locality. All right. The Ron Paul Liberty Movement has taken over 14 states, okay, and maybe even more than that. So if you're in one of those areas like Alaska, Maine, Nevada, okay, then get in the Republican Party, go to the meetings, support the Liberty Movement, support the constitutionalists, support real conservatives as opposed to rhinos, okay, and make your voice heard. Ask the uncomfortable questions to those rhinos who are possibly at the Central Committee or in these other positions and get rid of them, purge them, and start moving up. If you're not in one of those areas where you don't have a strong Republican presence or they're heavily rhino and you're not going to get far, take a look at the Constitution Party. Maybe the Libertarian Party is the answer. The idea is that constitutional principles, authentic conservatism, is what we have to support. But as far as national politics goes, right now, the number one obstacle to anything happening, the number one proponent of a socialist corporatist agenda, is not the guy in the White House. It's the guy in the House. It's John Boehner. He's the one performing pogroms against conservatives. He's the one handing money over to Obama and his corporatist agenda. He's the one that isn't having the subcommittees go after Eric Holder. He's the one not investigating the Benghazi thing earnestly. Okay, it's John Boehner. He's the guy who calls the shots.
Rex, let me break this thing down for you, okay? Let's get real here. John Boehner has been in the Senate for God only knows how long, or in the House for God only knows how long, right? Okay, and he had enough savvy and daring do to put together at least two coups against Newt Gingrich, one of which finally was successful, and he got rid of the guy, right? Okay, John Boehner's been around forever, been around the levers of power, knows how they work, or at least he thinks so, and knows how to maneuver in order so that none of the shit sprays on him when it hits the fan, right? That's kind of his core competency. When the shit hits the fan, he's Fred Astaire, and he dances right away from it, and boom, it hits this other guy, and he's like, hey, John Boehner, you know, none of that hit me, right? Barack Obama doesn't know anything about Washington, nothing, okay? He has no credentials recommending him to be president of the United States. He has no real political background whatsoever to speak of. He doesn't know what he's doing, and John Boehner, Mr. Hey, I was able to get the shiv into Newt Gingrich's side and get my people, Dennis Hastert, and all these other guys in control. All of a sudden, he didn't know what to do with Barack Obama. How is that even possible, that Barack Obama, a political ingenue, is able to outmaneuver this guy? Speaker of the House, a powerful position. John Boehner's just rolling, you know, laying over, rolling on his side, whatever. He's just done. He can't do anything now because he's on the other team.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You know, we have these conversations, you know, I have constantly had these conversations. There are times when I'm thinking about all the things that you guys are talking about or we are talking about, and I just go, they've got to be part of it. You know, in other words, they can't be that inept, so they must think that there's a different, this vision of the future of America, this new world order crap or whatever you want to call it, that he thinks that's the way we need to go. That's the only explanation after this long. I mean, call me crazy, but he's a traitor. To me, he is. He has played everything right into their hands.
Well,
I don't know
that's
what else
because,
to say about that.
Well, Chris, that's the narrative. That's the intention. You see, the thing about New World Order, it's such a stupid term, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of can't stand it. I know it started with the whole, you know, George W. Bush, I see a New World Order coming into view. It's not a New World Order. This is an Old World Order. This is about as ancient as Cain and Abel. It's about having power over others.
I call it Government 101.
Yeah, it's about having power over others.
Going back to pre-Magna Carta.
That's right, and what they did. I mean, look, you know, while Richard the Lionheart was off on a crusade, you know, trying to liberate Jerusalem from the Muslims, his brother said, "Oh, great, he's gone. He's thousands of miles away, and you know, I'm running the show, so I'm going to tax the shit out of people and just be awesome, you know, ruler." And so that was the game, and that's where the Magna Carta originally came from. So the simple fact is that this has been going on for a long time. The difference is that now the corporatists and the bankers have found a way to make this happen invisibly. They use it, you know, the fiat paper regime, the Federal Reserve, removing states' authority. They've wrapped this up so tight, and then they use these useful idiots like John Boehner, who likes his position, who likes his power, and he does their bidding probably without even knowing it, because it's beneficial to him. So you don't need some New World Order conspiracy. You just need to find what motivates losers like John Boehner and give them what they want as long as they give you what you want, and there it is. And that's how it's done. And so you have to break that. You've got to remove these guys and not give them quarter. And that requires resolute action. So get busy.
Absolutely, Rex. I mean, you cannot give up on this because it's not lost. The media message is part of it, but only if people believe it. If you stop believing it, it's just you having conversations with your neighbors. It's really not more complicated than that. You don't have to convince O'Reilly to believe in you. This is what, you know, for those of you who do consume sort of mainstream conservative media, which I used to consume but, you know, no longer participate in because it betrayed me this time, you know, this is what Limbaugh says, right? All these Republicans think that they're going to get the mainstream media, and if they compromise on this, the mainstream media will love them, and they'll be their darlings, and they'll go along with everything, and you'll start getting positive media coverage. This was the McCain fallacy, right? All these mainstream media places, they love McCain because he compromises away conservative principles. So if we run McCain, they'll talk about how great McCain is and what a wonderful choice he would be for a nominee. Well, no, because he's a false imitation to a Democrat. And so they're up there saying, why would you buy a false imitation when I have the genuine article? That's what happens, right? So you have to stop paying attention to what the mainstream media is saying and start having conversations with your neighbors. And you have to start having conversations that matter, not ones about Republicans versus Democrats, because your Democrat neighbors, and you do have them and you know them and you talk to them, they're not takers, you know? I thought to say some of them aren't, but, you know, hey, some of your Republican friends, they probably are too, you know. Out in rural areas, they got a whole bunch of land, and they're getting a bunch of money not to farm, okay? Are they takers? Well, no, they're not takers because they're just Republicans. Yeah, but now you're rationalized, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's not because they're takers. There's a different divide that you're not aware of, and you got to make everyone aware of it. You have to start reaching across the aisle, finding these people and saying, look, this government is out of control. It has jumped the bounds of the Constitution. It is engorging itself on our liberties and taking more and more of them until eventually they will all be gone. Okay? Listen to their criticisms of the, quote, Republican Party or whatever, but don't listen to them as a participant in the Republican Party, but as a critique of modern American politics. Step outside your party ID for a while. What is this person actually saying that they don't like that they're blaming the Republican Party for doing? And don't feel a reflexive need to defend the Republican Party. Feel a reflexive need to understand what is my neighbor saying about what he thinks is wrong with the government. And if you boil it down with them, and it probably comes down to too much government encroachment and too much government control, which is what you're worried about too. And now there's two of you.
And then go find a third person
to have that conversation.
And that's the force multiplier that you get by convincing additional people one at a time. And you can do that. It's not a complicated thing. You don't have to get into all the details of policy and all that. It's kind of simple. It's about liberty versus tyranny. And the other thing is, don't get bogged down in these party identifiers. Well, the Republicans did this. The Democrats did that. Well, look at them individually, because guess what? Justin Amash, Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, Republicans. Paul Ryan, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Republicans. Would you put those people in the same camp? Hell no. Okay? Very different kind of Republicans. So quit falling for those labels to kind of give large sweeping statements to indict one or the other. Look at the things in details. And Newt Gingrich, there might be one or two or three or ten or a dozen things that you don't like that he did. Look at the things that he did that are good, that are effective, and that work. And the blueprint that he gave here, this is the blueprint the Speaker of the House should be employing to manage this incompetent president instead of giving him free rein to fundamentally transform this country. Newt Gingrich closes out this article with the final point, which is negotiations, which, as we stated at the beginning, he said is the weakest and least useful of all the tools available to the House. And so he gets to it last, and he says, having used appropriations to prove seriousness, oversight to define the debate, legislation to build a coalition, and communications to define the contest, then House Republicans can negotiate from strength. This is a strategy which can set the star for a successful 2014 and 2016. And more importantly, this is the right strategy for our values and for America. That is very, very powerful. And with Ron Paul as the chairman for the Campaign for Liberty and going around to all the campuses on various speaking engagements, with a Speaker of the House who's a real conservative, who'll put Amash and Husselkamp and Jones and Schweikert back on their committees, maybe even make them the head of those committees, and will listen to Newt Gingrich and follow this blueprint, Obama becomes irrelevant. And then your great fear of not having succeeded with your vote for the lesser of two douchebags or two evils or two liberals or whatever the hell the stupid strategy was called that the duopoly put forward, well, the Speaker of the House can put Obama in a box in the White House for the next 4 years. And in 2014, you can put liberty-oriented, constitutional, conservative Republicans in power in the House and the Senate. And then in 2016, you can run a real conservative, whether it be Newt Gingrich, Rand Paul, Judge Napolitano, and then you can start seeing the wealth coming from our energy resources managed properly to restore us to sound money, constitutional government, limited and reduced taxes. This is what can happen. Stop having fear over what happens in the next month or two and start looking strategically and tactically. This is the blueprint. This is what we can use to win if we're willing to bury the hatchet on our personal pet peeve issue or holding on to our favorite little entitlement and yelling at everybody else for being a taker while we're on the take, okay, and restore free markets and sound money. This is how you make it happen, and it is up to you. So this is a pretty powerful strategy. We're going to go to closing thoughts, so why don't we go ahead and you know what? I think we have Harriet on the line, so I'm going to give her a say. Harriet, your mic is live if you'd like to chime in on this article before I go to Chris and Tex for closing remarks.
No, I just want to say wonderful. I agree. And there isn't much that Newt has done that is affecting me in a negative way.
No, it's wonderful. Well, thank you for listening.
Well,
and,
thank
and
you, Harry.
You're welcome.
Chris, did you want to give final remarks on the stuff we've been talking about tonight regarding the strategy to defeat Obama's effectiveness in the White House?
Oh, I totally agree. I think the thing that I'm trying to get my head wrapped around, and I've actually put out several posts and multiple sites, including the Get Rid of Boehner sites, going, where is the applied strategy? Where is the tools to force this to happen? And it seems like everybody's talking about it, but it's like, you know, where is that tool? You know, I think Boehner is the worst thing possible to be in there against Obama. You know, some of those Tea Party people could, you know, I had a thought in my mind, you know, was Bachman. You know, when you were talking earlier, I was just thinking, I could just imagine her in there. You know, she would get some stuff done. You know, I'm not saying she's the perfect choice, but it was just one of those flashes through my mind. But I think that something that I've said before that's real I believe is important, and Tex reconfirmed it, is every time I hear that word conservative, I get this flash of this massive propaganda machine that has made conservative look like a bunch of idiots. And when you talk about the liberty movement, you don't get that instant knee-jerk reaction from people who aren't necessarily conservatives or Christians or whatever, because they're not offended by Ron Paul's message, even though to you and I, he's a conservative. But there's something about that liberty movement message that crosses all those lines that conservative Christian right-wing message is not getting across those lines into other groups of people. So I think that the terminology, and you've heard me talk about this before, I think that the terminology has been tainted. And I don't think that the liberty, you know, the libertarian, liberty, Paul, liberty movement hasn't been tainted, except for the right-wingers that think he's a nut, or the neocons that think he's a nut. You know?
Yeah, the neocons.
So I really, Chris,
you're right.
I think terminology is going to be important in this.
Well, Chris, I think you're right. And, I mean, look, the fact is that the good words are gone. You know, liberal is a good word. Progressive is a good word. Conservative is a good word. Okay, they've taken them and they've painted them. But, you know, there are only so many words that you can use. And the fact is, I don't think that we want to give up the word conservative. I think we want to emphasize what it means. And the reality is, and we've talked about this before on the show, a conservative, a true conservative, is one who seeks to conserve the principles enshrined in liberal documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And as far as those people who want to vote with their Christian values, that's obviously incumbent on Christians. If you're a believing Christian, and most people in this country are, it is incumbent for you to vote those values. But that doesn't mean you vote for the asshole that speaks in Scripture or tells you that he's pro-life. It means you vote for the truth. You vote for the truth. And the fact is that you would have been far better off with effectively a very unchristian candidate, Gary Johnson, a libertarian for all intents and purposes, than you would be with any of the other options that you have. Because the fact is that on one point we can agree with, quote, libertarians, which is also kind of a tainted word, in the sense that if it's political libertarianism as opposed to social libertarianism, you're talking about federalism, you're talking about diffusion of power. And if you are a true believing Christian, then you want to witness to Christ in your political life, in your local community. And the only way you can do that is under the framework that is put forward by Ron Paul. So I think I don't think it's an issue of, you know, the far right Christian conservatives not getting it. I think it's a simple fact that the goals that you are trying to achieve are not achievable in a secular corporatist system of duopoly. So quit supporting it. And don't give me this crap that you read Romans and it says that you have to submit to all government authority. That's not true. You have to submit to legitimate authority, and the legitimate authority in this country, the supreme secular law in this land, is the U.S. Constitution. And no matter if the representative agrees with you on every single point that's important to you, pro-life, anti-gay marriage, all that stuff, you can't give that guy power if he doesn't assent to the oath he takes before God to defend the Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic, including himself. And that's that's what people have to really understand, because that is what is attractive about Ron Paul and the Liberty Movement. It's not Ron Paul himself. It's not the fact that he's a libertarian or even a libertarian, because he's really not. He espouses Austrian economics, which is the sound antithesis to the Keynesianism that we're all surrounded by. He is a conservative, pro-life Christian obstetrician, and he is a constitutionalist. That's what's attractive about him. He wants you to be personally responsible.
He's the future
and have
of American politics. He's the future of American politics, because the Republican Party has completely sold itself out, and it's been laid bare in this election. This stuff started in, well, I would say it started in 1998 when they got rid of Newt Gingrich, and then they ran George Bush, and everybody said Newt Gingrich, or they said George Bush is a Republican because he's from Texas, right? And those Texas conservatives you can always trust because they're actual conservatives. But his guy, his right-hand man in his hip pocket, his six-shooter, was Karl Rove, who's a big freaking rhino. And since that time, the Republican Party has been going nowhere but downhill. And we had a chance
losing
to
election.
Revive it, because in 2010, Tea Party movement came out. We're going to revive the thing. But we had too many rhinos. You know, the one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. Well, 90% bad apples is going to spoil the 10%, right? And so they're like, let's get rid of these good apples, right? Let's get them out of here. And then they're like, okay, 2012, we're going to follow up on the Tea Party. But they started with the demoralization, the throwing the wet blanket on the Tea Party. Aren't they really ineffective? Aren't they really? Who started that meme, right? They're saying this on Fox News. Oh, the Tea Party, they really don't matter anymore. The establishment did. Okay, but what they don't realize is in the process, you didn't stop the Tea Party movement. That's the voice of the people. What you did is you destroyed your own organization. Because that's where all the vibrancy and the life in your organization was. And so now you've destroyed your organization. You have no base of power anymore. You may be the, quote, leadership, but if there are no followers, you are nowhere. This gets back to the genius of the government shutdown. The president is head of the executive branch. But if the executive branch has no money and because the government shut down and they went home, the executive is the guy sitting in a room with a piece of paper saying, hey, I'm real powerful. Yeah, well, after 3 weeks, you're not. Anybody, you picking up that phone, anybody answering your call? You know, that was the strength of it. Same thing with the Republican Party. I'm a leader of the Republican Party. You're crossing me. I will stop you, Tea Party person. You know, and so he stops him, right? And then after a while, the whole Tea Party and the conservative base is like, why are we in this organization? Because this organization says it believes this, but when it's in power, it does the opposite.
Right.
And at this point, everyone's staring at themselves, and they're like, you know what? I think this Ron Paul thing's the way to go, because I'm seeing centralized power. I'm seeing corporate power. I'm seeing them shutting down any voice that's expressing small business, that's expressing individual liberty, that's expressing anything except more and more government control over my life. And at this point, I'm ready to leave, because what is the Republican Party to me right now? It is nothing more than an organizing principle, a shell that actually has access to the ballot in 50 states. That's all it is. And it's a party that, you know, publicly claims to support things that I have, and it does have a large army of zombies that will vote for it no matter what their candidate is. If Barack Obama – let me tell you something, okay? If Barack Obama ran as a Republican today, I guarantee you – 3/4 of the Republican Party voters would go vote for Barack Obama. Oh, my God, how could I say that? That sounds heretical. Well, you were going to do it with Colin Powell, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You were going to do it with Romney.
They just did it with Romney.
They just did it with Romney. So the thing is, there is a power in having the Republican Party, but the Republican voter says it believes something, but will vote for whoever is wearing the shirt, because all they see is the jersey, and they know nothing else. And that is the problem. And that's why it's hard to start a third party, because you got people who are stupid and they use shorthand. But believe me, you go listen to that 2004 speech that Barack Obama gave at the Democrat National Convention, which I heard on the radio. And the first time I heard it, I literally thought I was listening to the Republican convention. I was like, wow, I agree with what this guy has to say. He's like, this is great. And I said, that is, you know, Barack Obama, and, you know, welcome back to the Democrat. I was like, Democrat? Like, what? You know, I never heard anything like this. But imagine, listen to that speech and imagine if it had been said at the Republican Party convention. How many people would have been going ape shit for that, right? You know, wow, this is exactly, you know, well, you know, he borrowed Reagan's rhetoric for all of that stuff, stole it from the speeches, might as well, you know, I don't believe anything, but I do believe I should be in power, so how do I get in power? Well, Reagan seems popular, so I'll just steal his rhetoric. and people would, I mean, it's not complicated, you know, seriously, yep. It's very easy. So,
well,
vast majority of the Republicans
right.
would vote for this guy if he was under the Republican jersey, and that's the problem, because they have no principles, they only have party.
Well, we said that about Romney. Romney could have run under the Democrat Party. Nobody would have blinked an eye.
Yep.
Look, Romney went to Obama and probably asked for a job in his administration to show bipartisanship, for God's sake.
Right. Look, the simple fact is if you're going to fall for the rhetoric and you're going to fall for the bullshit of the duopoly, you're going to fall for everything, and they're going to rule your lives with an iron fist that you're going to welcome because they're going to provide you with a check, they're going to provide you with health insurance, they're going to provide you with everything that you could possibly need to be secure, just like a prisoner. You're going to get, you know, 3 squares a day, a half hour in the yard, and as long as you don't piss off the guards, everything will be smooth and fine. If that's the kind of life that you want to live, then leave us. Go away from us, go to another country where they already have this, and we wish you no evil, and just leave us alone. Because in this country, in this republic, we champion individual liberty and the concomitant individual responsibility, and we will take care of each other when we are down locally. And the only way that that happens is you make the federal government as irrelevant as possible. Yes, there are certain things that are reserved for the federal government. Those 18 things are all they should be doing, and they should be doing them well and at a low cost. They should be doing nothing else. And the only way you're going to roll that back is to put pressure on them to do what needs to be done. And the principles that we believe in, which are clearly stated by Ron Paul, appeal to just about everybody, except for people like John Boehner and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton
and neocons.
Bush. And Marco Rubio and the rest of the neocons and all the talking morons like Bill Kristol and Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and all those other guys. Stop listening to them. Turn off the television. Reach out to people, whether you do it on Facebook or Twitter or by email or, you know what, I don't know, maybe shake their hand and have a real conversation over a cup of coffee. You know, this is how it's done. You know, our founding fathers did it over ale, and we can do the same thing. You just have to get informed. And then you have to get involved. And don't wait until 2014. There won't be a 2014 if you allow Boehner to hand Obama everything that he wants. So now's the time to act. What I strongly recommend you do, like our page on Facebook, follow the show, get on Coalition of Freedom, tweet out Fire Boehner, and hammer the heck out of everybody who is standing against true Tea Party conservatives, True Liberty, Ron Paul Revolution conservatives. Get these guys back on their committees. In fact, they should be heading their committees. And I'm talking about Justin Amash and Walter Jones and Husselkamp and the other guy, Schweikert. And then, of course, you know, in the Senate, you got Rand Paul. And then, you know, support Jim DeMint and what he's doing. Jim DeMint is stepping down from Congress for a specific reason. He believes that he is not having his voice heard and he's not being effective in the Senate. And so he is going to head the Heritage Foundation, and he is a smart man. He is a true Tea Party conservative, and he is looking to the Ron Paul Revolution. He's not trying to alienate the new Republican voters, the future of the Republican Party. Now, I'm not saying that the future of conservatism is in the Republican Party. For all I know, it's in the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, or multiple parties. It doesn't matter. But the fact is that the Republican Party might be dying because of these idiots, but it is still salvageable. And even if it isn't, it'll be around for it'll be around for a few more election cycles, and like Tex said, 34% of the Republican voters are going to vote that way come hell or high water anyway, so you might as well put forward an effort to at least make it conservative again. But do something, and you can do something each and every day. As you're getting ready for Christmas, it's not so important to go kill each other for a cheap cell phone at Walmart or camp out all night for an iPad. What's important is to make sure that your children and your children's children grow up in a country that affords them the opportunity to succeed or fail on their own, as opposed to be dependent on the government for a life of mediocrity. That's not what America has ever been about. It's not what we should be about now. Don't fear the corporatists. Don't fear Barack Obama. Don't even fear John Boehner. And John Boehner's a crying baby. Just crush him. Crush him hard. Keep crushing Karl Rove because he's going to try to come back. Put him back under your heel. Put Dick Morris under your heel. Crush John Boehner. Let's get a real Speaker in the House who will follow this blueprint that Newt Gingrich laid out beautifully for us, and keep their eye on Ron Paul because you haven't seen the last of him. Gentlemen, final closing thoughts, and I'm going to wrap up the show. Chris Person and Tex.
Well,
Chris,
I
go ahead and go first.
Yeah, I'm just throwing this out there. I don't have any strong opinions one way or another, but I've been doing something I've never really done a lot of, and that's really researching and listening to what Rand Paul has to say, what his voting record is, the things he's standing for and fighting for, kind of keep an eye on the younger Paul. I don't know, if that's something that you guys want to get into sometime, but, you know, that's just something I've been doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got to fill this show, the airwaves with something
week. So, which Republicans are you looking at today? I mean, I watch Newt Gingrich, I watch Ron Paul, I watch Rand Paul, Alan West, you know, I was watching him. He didn't win his election, so, you know, I guess he's got to find a new path. If there is a path for him. But who do I care about in the Republican Party anymore? Well, I tell you what, I don't care about Paul Ryan, and I don't care about Marco Rubio, and I sure as shit don't care about Jeb Bush. And I don't ever want to hear anything about Jeb Bush.
Anybody
who advances a Jeb Bush case can go fuck themselves.
Or Chris Christie, right?
Chris Christie, yeah, exactly. Look, I like Chris Christie, tough talking guy, because I like tough talk. But he's tough talking for a Rhino position. Now, maybe that works for New Jersey, you know, and he's trying to fix the state, and God knows that the state was some serious problems. So maybe eventually we're able to turn the corner there and we have actual conservatives who can stand up for real principles. But New Jersey is completely retrograde and basically in a socialist utopia, which equals a liberty hell, and he's got to get it out of that, you know. But he's got to do it, you know, you can't drop liberty in all at once, you know, because people start, they're choking on their meal, you know, they can't take it. So he's giving them a little dose. You know, maybe he can make it happen. But who am I looking to in the Republican Party at this point? I'm concerned because what I'm seeing is the media is trumping Jeb Bush in the background. Well, Jeb Bush. But they're getting beaten back pretty hard on that. Wherever Jeb Bush comes up, they are getting beaten back hard.
Good.
And second, so then what they got to come with the B team. So Jeb Bush is their A team. Let me tell you, this team is fucked up. I'm sorry, you know, we're in recording time, so I'm just going to go and.
It's Tex and Rex.
Hear this? This is the radioactive part. You know, you don't like this, you know, whatever, go to hell. Okay, but this is their A team. Their A team is Jeb Bush. Oh, wow, if we could get Jeb Bush, we'd be doing really good. Markey, Rhino, Democrat sellout, you know, look at the record of the Bushes, you know, Bush Sr., Bush Jr., okay? You know, Bush Jr., more conservative than Bush Sr., I'll give you that, but not conservative by a long stretch, certainly doesn't care about the Constitution or the principles of liberty to a large extent, and Jeb Bush is going to be no different. And also, talk about killing your brand. Your brand is now dead. The Republican Party is now the party of monarchy. Okay, how do you want to walk around with that crown on your fucking head every day? I'm a Republican. That's fucking monarchy. You know? No. Go to hell, Jeb Bush. Get out of this party. And I'm not saying maybe you shouldn't have run in 2000. Maybe you would have been better than your brother. I don't know. You know, but I don't want to get into sibling rivalry, and I don't give a shit and go to hell. Okay? And then they're like, okay, so we got these other things in the box, and they are, you know, Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio. But you know what? Paul Ryan has white skin and Marco Rubio has dark skin, so we're going to go with the Marco Rubio thing because that's the way the stupid Republican Party thinks these days, is in terms of skin color. I mean, I thought this country was supposed to be getting beyond this, but we're not getting beyond this. That's what's
that's
dangerous.
Because the media doesn't want us to get beyond it.
No, the media is trying to divide everybody along these lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys, why are they trumping them or trumpeting them as our new saviors? Because they're rhinos. They're people who are go-along-to-get-along types. And now we got two flavors of go-along-to-get-along types. That's the real problem. Look, I don't got anything against these guys personally or anything, but they're not change agents. They're go-along-to-get-along types. Their whole careers are being handed to them on a platter. And the thing is, if you go along, if you just drink from this cup, we'll bring you to the next level. Paul Ryan, if you just, you know, become Mitt Romney's vice president, then we'll bring you to the next level. And it's like, okay, well, you know, and they're being handed all this stuff on a silver platter, and they're going along with it. And at the end of the day, it's like someone whose whole life has been handed to them. And then they're going to stand up, oh, now that I'm in charge, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to fight against this, like we'll take your whole life away.
Yep.
They can't do it. They can't do it.
No. No.
Because their whole time, they've just been trying, they're beta, you know, I don't know, beta male, go along to get along types, who are just like, I don't want to rock the boat, I don't want to stand for anything, I can't create anything on my own, but I will go with a certain thing and the sure path. And that's what they're doing. It's the death of the party. So you have to find people who will fight and who will stand up for something. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, look, I liked Ron Paul long before this thing started, back when I was in Washington. Newt Gingrich was long gone, so the field had been vacated. I was living in a world of George Bush and, you know, flailing around. Where am I going to find a conservative that I can actually, you know, care about anymore? I mean, even my own state senators, for God's sakes, were selling out conservatives. You know, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, she was no conservative, you know. So I found Ron Paul. I was like, okay, I like Ron Paul. I like what he has to say. I dig what this guy's saying. And started supporting him. And the Liberty Movement, it's the future. That's where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the whole country's going, because guess what? The word's out on the street, and you can't stop it.
Exactly.
It doesn't have anything to do with skin color or income level or boys versus girls or however else they're trying to divide people. It has everything to do with they want absolute control over your life, and they know what's best for you, or you know what's best for you.
That's right.
And that's liberty.
And the media doesn't want that message to get out. They want you to think in racial terms, in sexist terms, in class terms. The reason for that is it goes back to, you know,
religious
Rome.
Terms.
The Romans, you know, owned a bunch of slaves, and they said, you know, how do we, you know, make sure that we identify who's a citizen and who's a slave? And they said, well, let's put white armbands on them. And they say, that's a good idea. If they were wearing a white armband, we'd know they're a slave. And then the other guy says, no, we can't do that. Why not? If we put white armbands on all the slaves, then they will realize that there are many more of them than there are of us.
Yeah.
And they will revolt. So what you have to realize is get over your religious prejudice. I'm not saying give up your religious principles, okay? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to witness to Christ in everything that I do. But get over your religious prejudice. Get over your concern about this person did that and that person did this and Ron Paul's crazy and Newt Gingrich is a neocon and blah, 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 blah. And realize that the Constitution and liberty unites us, and work with people and put pressure on the right places. And as we look now to the Imperial City, which I can see from where I am, and we see Barack Obama sitting on a socialist throne, and we realize this guy's no threat. This guy has no money. This guy might have the power given him in the Constitution, but he can't exercise it without funds. He can't order a drone strike. He can't indefinitely detain anybody. He can't peer in your email unless he's being funded. And the one that funds him is the House. And the Speaker of the House is John Boehner. And he's the real problem. He's the one handing everything to Obama. He's the one destroying conservatism in the Republican Party. He's the one that's destroyed the rules that allow the presumptive nominee, whether it be Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio, to pick the delegates. So he's your target. You need to eliminate him by putting pressure on him. So tweet out Fire Boehner. Call his office every day. Let them know that you can't stand this guy and that he'd better step down. Put the pressure on the neocons, the corporatists, the duopoly, so that liberty will rise and conservatism, true authentic conservatism, will actually govern the federal government again and restrain it. and kick the corporatists out. We'll be back next week. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Amen.
Flames of liberty will never die.
Take my love, take my land.